Okay. This house is more fuller than I anticipated. Okay. Good morning, honorable members, our invited guests, the staff of the committee. Let me first make a request, please. Can I request this desk just next to you, Babu Zungula, the two desks, please? We want to put the honorable members at least somewhere. Can I request you come this side? Those two, yes. Just you come this side. Don't worry, you are all colleagues. Mavela njona babu zungu lukazel chingikbo nube ube next to Ukula. Thank you very much. I'm gonna be exemplar, or even more than exemplar. I'm sure we all see that the program of today is not populated, it's overpopulated. One, two, is that some are very fresh. They are coming in today, others are very stale, or they are moving towards being stale. They were here yesterday again from morning, 9 o'clock, until 6:15, ne? So you will understand that we are dealing with people who have got a hectic mind. So we will request that we try our level best that we to stick on the time that is allocated to us. That's why I said I will lead by example. As we meet today also, I will make my own reservation again at the tail end. I've got no intention to compete with the president. It just happened that coincidentally the president was meeting the investment group to deal with the current crisis of our financial state of affairs or economic state of affairs. And it just happened coincidentally that we're also mainly dealing with those that were supposed to be engaging with them as an investment to improve the economic condition. So it's a coincidence that we are having. As we have said, yesterday we met with labor or the trade unions in the two sectors where we are aligned, that is minerals and energy. And today we are meeting with the employers. I know, CSIR, you are not an employer. It's just that you are caught in between our interest and your strategic location as a state entity. The reason we have included CSIR is that we are undertaking an oversight next week to all the entities of the department, and regrettably, you are not part of that. So we're to make it a point that at least you come, because we think you assist the members of the portfolio committee just on some of the areas of interest. Now, I must say one of the things that I'm a very nice person, even at heart. When we invite, you know, when you start something, especially when you are not forced to do so, it is nice to appreciate and not make a person to sometimes regret why I did. Let me say this. Mostly, I'm sure I'm one of the few, I've been in the mineral side by government deployment. So it is possible that when we start something, we will be wrong. There will be areas we're not expecting to be perfect. You see, but when you do a good gesture, and then it's being made as if you are compelled to do so, it be not a good start. What we have is a session, what we would call, it's a greet and chat. It's not a public hearing. It is not a required consultative process. It's just a voluntary exercise where we said, even if we were to meet in a public hearing, you wouldn't know who are those people. So it's an exercise where we are introducing ourselves. We want to hear what is it that you expect from us. We want also to take stock of what do you think will be required to be the priorities of this committee. So in the process of identifying employers or stakeholders, whatever you call it, we may make that error. But I got a sense from others, I won't mention what happened, that it's like we are compelled. No, we are not. So the mere fact that sometimes we come late with the request, if we were like yourself, would be saying, no, we've got a cocktail event, can you come and join us? Now you can't then say, why didn't you invite me into? It's my decision to invite. If by error you're not invited, just say, please, in future, remember me, that I also exist, I have an interest. So I don't want someone who live here with a perception or an understanding that there was. It's not even, it's a choice that we make. These members, almost all of us are new, live that others are, might not be new completely in Parliament, but they are new, in particular in this portfolio committee. This is a portfolio committee of mineral resources and energy. They used to be before a portfolio committee of mineral resources and energy. It was separated. It came back again as the portfolio committee of mineral resources and energy. Two separate departments were merged. So there is no department that is more better than the other. Not that energy is better than mineral resources, neither mineral resources. It's one department, they have been merged. No one has swallowed the other. Lastly on this point is that when we were dealing with labor, with the unions, there were very few. And when we were looking, and I must say this thing, when we're looking on the employer side, it's the other way around. For the unions in mining, there were more than those who have got an interest in energy. The other way around, when it comes to the employers, there are very few wolves who are on the employer side in mining. And there is a long list when it comes to those who are in energy. So we had to prioritize. Fortunately, the unions, they did us a favor. I like the employers, not that the employers are wrong. The unions, they did us a favor. Some decided on the 11th hour not to honor the invitation. You see? So I'm not saying try and convert yourselves into trade unions so that you don't flood the process. So I think it's important just to say, so we're not looking at an exercise. If you were to be liberal, is to say you are in a relationship building phase. We are still going to deal with hardcore issues. But we want to say at the end of these sessions, when we are done, we must be able to say, here are the areas of prioritization that we need to consider. Lastly on that, you are lucky. All of us, we assume we are lucky. We have not adopted the Parliament's stretch plan, which means we still have the privilege and the possibility or advantage that when we do our own committee stretch plan based on the overall stretch plan of Parliament, we might find or will find a way of incorporating some of these interactive session outcomes. So I think it's important just to say that. So, having said so, the last point I want to say, those who have run programs of a funeral, they are very bad about one thing. There will always be someone coming to your ear whispering, please, can you put so-and-so, we forgot, is a sister to my uncle's aunt who wants to speak. We allow that, but unfortunately, this one is not at the discretion of any person who's whispering. It's at the discretion of the chair. Yeah, power is not a sponsorship. So it is up to me how I run the meeting, and it is up to me to ring the bell when you have exceeded your time of invitation. That's just one part that do. Lastly, let me go to my honorable members. You know what I said one day, please today, let's be exemplar. You know what I said one day? I said to the Speaker of the House, when I looked what was happening, I said, probably all presiding officers of Parliament must be taken through an early childhood development course, because you see some of the things, you will be surprised that these are parents and these are responsible citizens that have been given the most privilege to come to these corridors of power to represent the interests of our people. I will really make the appeal to say, in order for us, when we don't have time to proceed properly, can we all focus our energies on the people that we have invited, listen to them, and I want to say this thing in advance so that I'm not referring to anyone. I was taught one thing. You can say the same thing and it may not provoke someone, but the manner in which you say it is the one that may provoke the person. So I can say something that one honorable member could say, but the manner in which I say it, it may be the manner that I may think it's attacking someone, but it reflects the character in me. So I will appeal that I don't want to sit here and mediate on issues that all of us will know. We are here. Part of that thing is that we must just respect the fact that we are given one of the most highly esteemed privileges when we are here. Let anyone, wherever that those person are, feel that that person really represents what we want to see. We are ambassadors. So I just want to say this, that thing, without prejudice. Before I go to the first rule, any team people that will be presenting, please introduce yourselves. I only do these things to show you that you didn't bring someone you met somewhere on the street and then said, come join me. So we don't want someone who's going to stand up, hi, I'm sorry, so, and then the next one. You introduce your team, like I'm doing. I'm Mr. Luzipho, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources and Energy. We've got Ubabu Zungula, who is a member of this committee. We've got Mr. Kula, who is also a member of this committee. We've got Mr. Mtenjane, who is a member of this committee. We've got Mr. Milem, who is also a member of this committee. We've got Mr. Ngumalo, Honorable Ngumalo, is also a member of this committee. We've got Mr. Mahlaule, who is also a member of this committee. We've got Mr. Volmarans, is also a member of this committee. And we've got Mr. Bilangulu, a member of this committee, as well as Umama Umalinga, who is a member of this committee. Those are your honorable members that were tasked by South Africans amongst the rest of the 400 that is in Parliament. And Parliament tasked them to look after the interest of the mineral wealth beneath the soil as well as the energy supply that is required. And they are very serious about their task. I'm sure you will see yourselves until they do what I didn't expect from them for now. And you will see Babu Upit, Babu Deman, you will see ne? You are blending. It's becoming younger. It means there is more energy than previously. So brace yourself for people who have got stamina to continue even beyond. You see, the older you become, the more there is bad time. Others, there is chubana time when you think of sleeping. So you can see the both probably exist. So do that. So having said so, honorable members, can we take any apologies?
Good morning, everyone. I've got apology from Mrs. Phillips. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, having said so, we've got Samta. I wrote something wrong now. She wants me to correct it. I'm not going to change what I said. Samta, they say you must lead by example.
Thank you.
The one who come first must set a precedent for the other. I will tell you what I'm going to do. Don't worry. You've got, I said 1 hour, ne? Let me check my time. It's 10:30. Whether you are finished or you are not finished, 11:30, that's cut off time. Yes. You can start.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairperson, and good morning, committee members, and good morning, stakeholders from different parts of the industry. My name is Bridget Khadebe, Motsepe Khadebe. and I am the president of the South African Mining Development Association, which is representing junior mining companies. These are companies that have an asset base of 50 million to 7 billion. Above is the Minerals Council that was previously known as the Chamber of Mines. This organization has been existing since President Mandela's time, and we saw the need as an organization to create a junior chamber, because at that time, when the mining law was converted from the old mining law to the new mining law, we only had the Chamber of Mines, and the junior producers like Metarek, Simon Malone, and a lot of historic junior producers didn't have a voice. And uniquely, the first board that we had at SAMDA were a lot of historic white junior producers, and through the years, we then had the emergence of the historically disadvantaged South Africans. On my right is Mr. Peter Temane, who is the chairperson of SAMDA, and at the back we are with Mr. Tswane Malope, who also is from SAMDA. The reason why we're here is that 30 years ago, I personally became the first black mining producer to build mines. I was actually a woman. And at that time, the laws were very clear. Black and white women were not supposed to go underground. And Peter also, within the past 30 years, has been very active. They started as a family with diamonds and converged into other minerals. So when you talk to us, you really talk to producers, because I personally owned a contract mining company to the extent of ending up owning sharp sinkers that build mines in Sedrun in Switzerland. You find that the longest and the biggest and longest railway tunnel in the world was built by us. Joinville in France, the underground nuclear waste disposal shaft. So we are really very active in mining. And what we're going to do here is share our knowledge and our experience in terms of what the issues are. We've been there since President Mandela's time, since Mr. Bobuatha's time, when he was our first mining minister, and all over other ministers, creating the law and participating in the creation of the law, but still building mines and owning mines all over, wherever we are. Now today, Mr. Temane, I'm going to ask you just to make the introduction, and now then I'll kind of continue with all the others. So we're just asking you to please allow us to share what we have gone through. The B era came when Mandela became the president, and many other people participated. And what we're going to say today is not just because we just became BE, because we were there before the BE laws were created. It's the experience and the knowledge that we are going to share, and we hope that we will continue on that basis. Mr. Temane.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable members of the committee, colleagues from the industry, and distinguished guests. I think, Chair, before I start with the first slide that we have, I think it would only be proper for me to make just a few opening remarks, in that this being the sixth administration of our dispensation, we are aware that over the years there have been endeavors to make things happen in the country, but today we are much worse off than where we were a couple of years back. Therefore, I would implore the honorable members of the committee that if possible, whenever you engage with the industry, always have the back of your mind the preamble of the South African Constitution, the preamble of the BBBE Act, and the objectives of the MPRDA. If you have this all the time, it will give you sort of direction, not trying to tell you what to do, but remember the reasons why you are here. Those preambles and objectives are what we need to achieve. The first slide, as you can see, what it says there. The MPRDA states that the mineral resources of this country belong to the people of South Africa. And the state
is the custodian thereof. More often than not, people think the state refers to the executive. Even as said that the parliament is one of the elements of statehood. Therefore, by extension, the custodianship of the mineral resources is also belongs to parliament, of which you are part of. If we forget that the executive, while it's supposed to be implementing the laws that were passed by this august house, this parliament, it's important that going forward, we have to hold the executive accountable, because the MPRDA was passed in this parliament and it was declared a constitutionally valid legislation by the Constitutional Court. Therefore, the rules and the acts of the MPRDA have got to be adhered to. The slide says the MPRDA non-compliance and charter non-compliance. It's important to know that after 25 years, you see some of the slides were going down, where we were as a country in terms of mineral ownership. We have actually regressed. What we have before is worse than what we have now. Mr. Adebe, when it goes through that, we'll explain that to you ourselves. On the issue of transfer pricing, I wish to say, Chair, ask yourself this question. Why is South Africa not receiving the fair amount of the value of its mineral resources that it exports? For example, today coal is around about $100 a ton, but the operating mines are being paid average $38 a ton. Now, simple arithmetic. If it's $8 a ton and input cost and everything else, the profit comes to, before EBT, $8 a ton. It means whatever the profit they make, if it's $6 a ton, is what they're going to pay corporate tax over on, as opposed to $100. Yes, transfer pricing is legal. And I think the chair will remember about 2-3 years back, we came to a joint sitting of the portfolio committees of finance, of mineral resources, and also of trading industry. And we spoke at length about transfer pricing. And we exposed it for what it was. But lo and behold, after we left, unfortunately, just put aside. And today we are having job losses. We have economic downturn, no growth. And it's all because we are not in charge of our mineral resources. If we can confirm this protocol committee or parliament can make the point that if the ruling price of a commodity, like for instance gold, we know $1,500 today, yesterday some other times average took $1,200 an ounce, that when we export it, have that be paid into the country, and then from there they must pay their commission to whoever is doing that, but not getting about $800 for what we export. That's where the problem is. Transformation. The funny thing is, we look even in terms of the port representations. We have in this country beautiful laws like Employment Equity Act. We have our own charter. And over and above that, the Constitutional Court ruled that in terms of employment, the employment equity must reflect the national population demographics. And if there's a conflict between a national demographics and provincial promotion, which is the provincial ones, then the provincial ones will take precedence. Which therefore says, even Gauteng, for instance, blacks in terms of Africans are 82%. Then it means the boards of those companies that are resident in Gauteng should reflect the population demographics. But it's not happening. Year in, year out, we have reports from our companies to parliament, to departments of labor and all that. And the law says if they're not compliant, hit them 10% of their turnover. Not even one company over this past 25 years has been given a 10% penalty. In this country as well, we have in the Imperial Year 1647, not even one company has its mining right revoked. And I said to me, are you compliant? Coming to the implementation of the NDP and also MPRDA, why is it that Parliament is not holding executive to enforce the laws that Parliament has passed? That should be what this political committee should be doing going forward, to make the point that the implementation and enforcement of the laws that was passed here are enforced. I'll let you continue to this.
That's the preamble in terms of what our presentation is going to encompass. So what we're trying to do, we've been in and out of Parliament. We've addressed a lot of portfolio committees. We've had different ministers in our department. And the laws that Parliament created, Parliament has delivered, all political parties in Parliament. But in actual fact, after the delivery, the implementation of these laws are not effective. And we've been coming in and year out and saying to Parliament, please let us implement. And we're going to just go through the areas that we are worried about. And when we created the mining, when we came and inherited the mining industry in South Africa and became stakeholders, we had an exploitative mining culture in South Africa where you find that there was no historical advantage, South Africans owning, there was a militant labor force, no royalty payments to communities. I come from a community, and then from there, the communities gave foreign investors and local investors their mining rights, and those mining licenses that they got from our farms and where we own the minerals, they were then created a mine. And all we wanted as rural community members was royalty payments for roads, clinics, bursaries, and all kinds of community development. But that money never came. And every time we marched with the Royal Bafokeng Nation and all other communities, and that's how we created CONTRALESA, Congress of Traditional Leaders, because we had a mineral association of indigenous people that was members of the communities, royal people and non-royal people, community members. We wanted just the royalty to be paid. And fortunately, with the new South Africa, the laws changed. And you have also a neo-colonialist lack of beneficiation and what existed in ghost towns. You find that we have the potential of ghost towns that will be created because we extract, we explore, we export our minerals, but we do not beneficiate. Beneficiation means we don't have factories to do industrialization and to manufacture. A lot of the companies, the ore that we have, is exported, and we still have a new colonialism ownership where you find that the ownership is also dominated by foreign companies. The majors, our companies that were local, the Anglos and the Beers, went offshore listing. They had the primary listing in South Africa, and when the primary listing was in South Africa, they could then recoup whatever money and keep it in the country. And as soon as all these other companies went offshore listing, they then became foreign-owned. These were conglomerates. We were just talking with Mr. Peter in the car, saying even Old Mutual now is going to delist. And when Old Mutual and all these companies went offshore, they had a lot of profit in their balance sheets. The market cap was unique. By the time they come back with billions of losses. Our country has not achieved much. And then you find that the neocolonialism, if you see on your right, there's a lot of extraction of the ore, and it goes into Europe and all over the world. And the idea is, don't worry, Africa, we'll go away when we finish. Is that what we want to achieve? No. And then you find that here, if a wall was built around the continent, the rest of the world would go out of business in Africa because we have all the minerals. And a lot of and if we are trying to move from exploitative industry to sustainable mining industry, today we have problems with FISMAS 4, we have problems with power outages, load shedding, we have problems with ETOs. There are so many problems. Why? Because we're going to go through the transfer pricing, and we will then explain. It was very important for the country to create Section 100 of the Act. Section 100 of the Act, or the Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act, speaks about the mining charter. The mining charter, it had elements of the charter. I'm not going to go through them because we have a few minutes. 1 hour is not enough. We can talk for more than 1 hour, and you will go through them. But there are nine elements of the charter, and I'll just touch those that are important. Look at the ownership profile. When the ownership profile was created, I remember, government then created the Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act, and then the mining charter came into being. When the mining charter came into being, it said the equity participation should have been 51%. That document was leaked, and the stock exchange overnight was nearly 10% of its value. And then it was important for us to go to Mpumalanga with all the stakeholders. Who was it? Barry Davidson, I said that time, the president of the mining chamber, and Roger Baxter, who's very unique, he's still there, he's now the CEO of the Minerals Association that was previously known as the mining chamber. We were all there, and we went to a Bosbara to have a look at this. And when we were there, we then decided that the state should become the custodian of the mineral rights. And then what came out in that interview and that discussion of a Bosbarat to try and address the mining chamber, the 51% was too much money. We cannot afford the 51%. And we accepted. So he said, okay, fine. We will start with the equity participation of 26%. This is not a free gift. You are going to become a willing seller and willing buyer in free market conditions. Genuine market conditions must prevail. So it was very important to have historically disadvantaged South Africans can get on trade. White women were part of it because the laws were very clear. Black and white women were not allowed to be anyway in terms of the mining industry. We were not allowed to go underground. The laws were against that. So it was important to involve everybody as HDSA that was previously disallowed. So then we decided, okay, we'll settle for Section 26%. And the agreement that we did in the Charter of 2004 was that what we'll do in 2002, until 2004 and 2014, there were 10 years requirements that we will then, as the industry, seek that the historically advantaged companies should then contribute 100 billion, not a gift. That 100 billion was going to assist us, those that are historically disadvantaged, to get access to money to buy the shares. So you own a mine, and when you own a mine, you have a historically disadvantaged partner. And when you have that partner, the partner must get 26%. The partner is a black person. When the partner doesn't have a balance sheet, the partner doesn't even know how to design a financial model. We knew, and the good thing is about Sanda, they're historically traditional small-scale miners and junior miners. Well, white people, and they were all on our board. Bernard Swanepoel, Sano Malone, Impala Platinum, we had also Xstrata, we had that before Xstrata was Glencore, we had those white producers in our board because there were not many black people. And they were very upset because the monopoly was controlled by the chamber. They were not allowed to be partners at the Richards Bay Copan Terminal and all that. So we were having a genuine partnership. On our board, my deputy chair was Nchaka Paseka Njolo, and we had a combination of black and white producers. But what I'm trying to say, that 100 billion was supposed to have achieved something. Within the first 5 years, the 100 billion was supposed to have accrued 15% in the ownership of historically disadvantaged South Africans, fully paid up, unencumbered net value. Unencumbered net value says you own a house and you own a car. To the extent that you own that car and that house, if you haven't paid that car or house, if the house or car is 1 million and you haven't paid it off, and the banks call for you to pay your higher purchase, the banks will take the car. So an unencumbered net value is that fully paid up. So for as long as you own that car, or own that house, or own the business called a mine, the bank is the real owner because the bank is going to ask for the money, and for as long as you haven't got 100% ownership, the bank can take your house, your car, your mine, your factory, whatever. So we needed that. So the contribution of 100 billion was going to help us having 15% within the first by 2009, and by 2014, 10%. Equity participation in historically disadvantaged South Africans. But unfortunately, that never happened. Now, what I'm saying is that if there was monitoring and evaluation, and the department and head already used some of the and clauses of the Act to penalize. We would not have had a problem where you find Peter and I now talking about today the ownership has not been achieved, and we will explain to you what we mean. So the effect of ownership, you read through it, I told you what it is, and then we also wanted to talk about Section 26 of the mining law. Why is it that to date we don't have the factories? Why is it that even today, all our minerals, we're the leading producer, number one in chrome, number one in platinum, in so many producers, I'm going to show you that our strategic minerals. But we do not create the end product. So if you look at Section 26, and I'm going to read it because I want you to look at Section 26.3 in particular. The minister may initiate or prescribe incentives to promote beneficiation of minerals in the Republic. If the minister acting on advice of the board and after consultation with the Minister of Trade and Industry, and let me tell you who the board is. It was a board, I was the deputy chair of the first board, and the DG of Minerals and Energy was the chair. Bernie Davidson sat on that board, from representing the Chamber of Mines as the president of the chamber, and Roger Baxter, and we had, you know, also leaders like me. I was sat on that board. Peter also sat on board. So it was organized business and organized labor, and government departments, three government departments, women in mining, Contra Lesa, where all the mines are taking place in the rural area, particularly Holomisa was a board member. So this board, the minister had to advise the minister, and the minister would sit in the board. Section 57 to Section 69 of the Act speaks about how the board functions. So if you look at the section, the MPRDA between Section 57 and you go on until Section 59, it will tell you what the board does. So if the minister, acting on the advice of the board, and after with the consultation of the Minister of Trade and Industry, finds that a particular mineral can be beneficiated economically in the Republic, the minister may promote such beneficiation subject to such terms and conditions as the minister may determine. Now pay attention to Section 26.3. Any person or any company who intends to beneficiate any mineral mined in the Republic, outside the Republic, may only do so after written notice and consultation with the minister. Why is it that our ministers never went to the Glencores and the traders and asked the traders, who are your manufacturers to whom you're selling our products? And I'll show you what the products are. And we have this strategic minerals. And then Glencore will say, yeah, the list. And then the minister will then go and contact these companies and say, wait, Barlow World, why are you importing the front end loaders and all those from offshore from Germany when they could be done here? Why is it that we have company X, company Y, importing all these other products from other parts of the world when you could be doing there? And if you are a producer, say, no, China and India is giving me less. And then the minister can say, but who tells you we don't have special economic zone that are tax incentives? And who tells you that we cannot maybe, if you buy it here, get even the commodity cheaper? So if I'm a manufacturer, I'll say to the minister, oh my God, if I can get an area where I can then create my factory and produce whatever it is that I want to produce, then I'll do it in South Africa. But what I'm saying is that it has not been done. You know why? Because when you go to this special economic zones area or you go anywhere in South Africa, there are no factories. Our workers get retrenched on a daily basis. We have a lot of brain circulation where white people and black people are going offshore to look for jobs during the retrenchment. Then we could have created an industrial zone of many factories and being the leaders. And let us go through. And if you look at beneficiation, I'm just going to scan through the others. These are the special, our strategic minerals. The government declared 11, and we said government. Now, with the finding of oil and gas, and with the finding of limestone and phosphate, let us increase and make them 15. Now, this special economic, Now, and then you find that also, something else that you have is that these are the 49 listed companies. Have a look at them. In 2014-2013, we did a research. And in that research, we looked at the 49 listed companies in the JSE mining. Their market cap was 2.574 trillion. Now, if every mine had by 2014 unencumbered net value ownership, you would have had within the historically disadvantaged South Africans ownership, $669 billion. But that has not happened. When we looked at the when we did our research, we saw that we were not 669 billion. We were actually 63, whatever billion that is, and not nearly less than 3% ownership. Now we are saying that should not have happened. And if you read that slide, it tells you exactly. Now let me go further. And also something else. Why is there no effect of ownership because of transfer pricing? Let me tell you what transfer pricing is. Transfer pricing, you own a mine, you own maybe a wine farm, and you produce wine. You own a mine, and you extract the ore. And then you own the mine. And the mine that you own, does it has to sell whatever it is. Or maybe the wine farm that creates the wine has to sell the wine bottles offshore. But you create your own marketing company offshore in a tax haven. And when you do that, you sell to yourself from your mine or your farm the wine that maybe if you were to sell it directly without going through a marketing company that's owned by you, and this marketing company is in the listed tax haven, you then sell it to yourself for maybe $100 per ton, when the actual price could have been maybe $400 per ton. Then you come back and you say to the government, you know, I own a farm and this wine bottle of mine could not give me enough. I only got maybe $50 for the wine bottles and I only got $100 per ton for my commodity and I cannot pay tax. So government needs the tax to create a lot of things in the country. Government cannot then create roads. That's why you have ETOs. Government cannot help with electricity for ESCOM. Now you have load shedding. Government cannot create universities and schools. Now you have fees must fall. And you have service delivery protests. You have all these problems. And I'm just saying this has to stop. So now what should happen is that you then sell to yourself, your marketing company, that commodity for a less price. Then you go to the workers and you say, I can't give you $12,500 because I am not getting money. I'm not making profit. And then you have Marikani because the workers are saying we must be paid. Now what we are saying is that when we looked at this, the good thing is the companies, it's not a black and white thing. Those white companies or companies that are any color, that are the primary listing in South Africa, Anglo-Gold Ashanti, Impala Platinum, and Ad Extrata, and ARM, and all the others, were not guilty of transfer pricing. And if they were, it was very minute. Why? Because we are governed by the Reserve Bank of South Africa. But the companies who were ours previously and went offshore, or those that are offshore companies investing in South Africa, they are doing it. So we are the ones that said not under our watch. We went to the Portfolio Committee of Parliament and we really aggressively did give a lot of input. And with our chair, Chair Zef Luzipo, and the chair, the former chair of DTI, Joan Fabs, she's a formidable woman, it's a pity she's not known back, and also the finance, the joint committee was held and they looked into it. And I must say, Mr. EFF, your leaders were very hawkish. And I hear Floyd even went and did his master's doing transfer pricing. And we had EFF, DA, everybody said, no, the country must benefit. And then the Judge Dennis Davis Commission was created, and Judge Dennis Davis is now investigating. But it didn't end there. What happened is that President Mbeki even took it to the African Union to have a look at it because he discovered that 582 billion was looted out of Africa. But in 2012, the Global Financial Integrity, a New York-based company, was saying 147 billion in 1 year was taken out of our country. And at the same time, BHP Billiton and Rio Tinto were being taken up by Australian tax officers, the very same thing. So even in Australia. So our country was very proactive, and Africa is having a look at it. And what we're trying to have is a continent and a country where our government will have the necessary budget to do the necessary things. So let's go back. Now, enterprise development will have not have been a disaster if we had those factories, and the factories were producing the specific stuff that we needed, and then you could buy here and not import everything from China and India or wherever it is. And if you look at this, These are some of the commodities we could do from our strategic models. Iron ore, manganese, nickel, vanadium and chrome, and many more. And we are saying, why is it that Section 26.3 is not being implemented? And what we're hoping you would do as a portfolio committee is engage the minister. I'm not going to say Minister Mantashe and the present leadership in the DMR, DME, they are guilty because they just come on board. And Mantashe used to be on the union side. And he knows exactly what has to be done. So we are hopeful that hopefully he, in consultation with the DTI minister, will then look into the effect of creating factors that will come with this. Why are we having iron ore, manganese, nickel, vanadium, and chrome exported, and then we buy the end product? And also energy commodities, uranium, thorium, and all that. We're saying we need to do it here. But if you look further, gold, diamonds, copper, and phosphate, a lot of the stuff that is done from there is imported. But if you have Section 26 implemented, and if you're going to make sure that transfer pricing doesn't happen, you will be able to create that. And then if you look at fuel cell, you all know we're the number one platinum producer in the world. And why is it that we have catalytic converters creating the fuel for and the energy for the engine of the cars? And with the fuel cells, with the platinum, you could then make sure you look at this on your own and you see what the fuel cell car components are. If you have fuel cell cars, it shows you exactly what it is. But with fuel cells beyond the cars, you can have energy for all these other non-car elements that I have in the pictures. You'll have a look at it when you have time. So I'm just saying I'm very happy. We, the industry leaders, have already looked into fuel cell. The green revolution is there, and we have to be also very sensitive in terms of carbon emission. And this is one thing we can look into. But have you known there's a Section 12.1 tax allowance that gives you tax incentives. You have a special economic zone, you can go and get access to lots of tax allowance for greenfield products. And if you do that, then you don't have to pay tax when you have maybe that factory in a special economic zone, which is a tax haven, and the end product will be much competitive compared to the cheap products that you import from China and India. But at the same time, concerning tax, we also looked at what Australia's doing. Australia created the flow-through shares stock exchange. Excuse me. I was drinking water and it went through the wrong part. Australia created the flow-through shares stock exchange. It's a stock exchange for exploration only, oil, gas, and minerals. One of the reasons why Australia is a leading country in terms of exploration and in terms of mining ownership is because through the flow-through share stock exchange, they've got a major stock exchange, the stock exchange for the junior, and they've got a stock exchange for exploration. Now an individual or a company that will list in that stock exchange will then get a tax deduction. So that tax deduction today, if I do exploration, it must be for all exploration and not beyond. If you go and build a mine, then you go to the Altex in South Africa or you go to the JC. And when Minister Manuel was the minister, we had a joint committee that was co-chaired by me and the head of taxation. And in that committee, we tried to create the flow-through share stock exchange in South Africa. Because we said to the minister, we can't have the Canadians come and own us, and own Africa. Let us see what it is that they've done. And the Canadian government assisted. Minister Pumzile was the Minister of Mines at that time. And we looked into it and we investigated. What it means is that tax incentive that is flows through normally today in the normal stock exchange that will stay in a listed company on a stock exchange does not go to the individual. So in Canada, even individuals, if you go and buy the shares, you can get the tax deduction. And many people then would buy the shares. And this is how the company gets the money. So we wanted to do the flow-through share stock exchange. The Minister Manuel realized that it was very important for them to do amendments in the tax laws and finance laws. And we are still looking into that. And we're also talking to the African Union. I'm also the ambassador for economic development and women in the Pan-African Parliament. They've just appointed me three weeks away, a girl to be the voice of women in economic development in Africa through the Pan-African Parliament. And I also have an office there. So what we are doing with the mining development unit of African Union, and also with African Caribbean Pacific Partnerships, and also the Pan-African Parliament, we're looking at how we can also look at the, and also the BRICS, because I also sit on the BRICS Business Council. I was nominated by the Business Chambers as one of 5 people to sit in the BRICS Business Council. So we then look at how we can create a flow-through shared stock exchange. This stock exchange will assist us to have exploration money. You cannot own the mine if you don't explore. And if you don't explore, you can't own the mine, you can't beneficiate. And it, because there are no minerals, or you have to be like offshore, have the minerals exported to you. And also, if you look at the special economic zones, they say to you what the incentives are in terms of the tax haven. You look through it. But then there are also legislative clauses of the MPRDA that the government could have implemented and the ministry should have. Section 47, for instance. And then you have Section 90, you look through it. Section 93, you look through it. And there are also Section 98, and then also Section 99. And you, so I'm just saying there are so many sections that have not been effectively deployed to make sure that implementation of the law prevails. And we are hoping that you as a portfolio committee will assist. But we also did something else. Those of you that come from Skukuni, we did do the executive mayor, who's now no more executive mayor, we went to him and said, executive mayor, we need to make sure that we integrate. Because one day I went to Atok mine, and I saw here's the mine. And where the mine is, you've got roads, you've got clinics, you've got houses. But then in between there's the road, the rural community, there's nothing. And in, at the back there's also another development of the mine. And I said, no, why don't we get all these mining companies together and let them integrate? And let these old mining companies put money in the kitty. And what we would do, we create a producers forum. So there were about 18 to 23 at the end that came together. And this, and Thaba Mufumadi was the MEC of Economic and Finance and Mining. And Wakona Motodi was the premier. The premier's office also had a seat in the producers forum. And if you have a look at this, if you look at this diagram, you look at it, on one side you had the mining companies, on the other side you had the government. The executive mayor would say, my town and house planning or my budget is X, and the mining companies will say, okay, we will put Y. And you look through how the producers forum in the municipality context, in your slides you look through them, and the mining industry concepts. But these were the producers forums that were very active and, you know, black and white company owned. And what we did, we managed to raise $9.3 billion on our own with the government bodies, and we created the dams. And the implementation of that meant the mining companies needed water to create mines. We needed roads and anything else. So I'm just saying, when we started there, the late Edna Molewa used to be the premier in Northwest. She then asked the same companies, because the same Anglos, the Beers and the Stratas and the Arms and black and white companies, they would then also have mining companies in other provinces. So these provincial leaders came to us, the MECs and the premiers, and said, please create producers forums on us. What it means is that you don't just say to government, I want a house without being party to that. I want water without being party to that. So we made sure that there was an integrated resources development program, and Bidden Africa was the management team that was implementing. And we had the World Bank, Baba Kobukun, and the World Bank Mining come for 1 week. They spent, and they called it Africa's best kept secret. And for that whole year, the World Bank brought the experts to come and see what we are doing, and they're now using our models, adapting it and adopting it to suit whatever countries in the world to implement. So I'm just saying, and you know, you read the Skukuni project, there were 17 mines, 23 mining projects, and the population of 1.1, but beyond Skukuni, all the other departments and all the other provinces, the ones that I quoted, were on board. And we would like to have the resuscitation of this producers forum continue. So what we are saying today, because we are giving a few minutes, is that we need to implement. We have the laws. Your job as a portfolio committee is to assist us. And we're asking this with humility and with respect. Please assist us to implement. Please assist the country to create special economic zones that will create manufacturing companies. Please help us halt the exportation of our minerals without the end product being manufactured in South Africa. What we are saying when we speak to Africa, we also say, why should the whole car maybe be manufactured in South Africa? Let us make sure that some parts of the cars, maybe the rubber, can be done for the tires, because there's a lot of rubber in the DRC. Can be done in DRC, and maybe the seeds can be done in Ethiopia. And that is why what we're saying in these committees that we're having through the Pan-African Parliament and through the African Union, we're looking at how can we stimulate development in other African countries by virtue of looking at the strategic minerals, and after looking at the strategic minerals, making sure that the end product comes from Africa in partnership with all the other countries. So the South Africa First strategy should prevail, and if you look at this, in 2011, the Canadian economic minister deprived BHP Billiton from taking over Potash Corp, because they say, no, it's not helping with the net results of the country. So we must be proudly South African, and let us come up with rules and regulations that South Africa will benefit. Thank you very much.
This comes to the conclusion of our presentation. However, as a closing remark, I would like to say to everybody that remember, take for example the one slide referred to the jewelry manufacturing. In 1996, diamonds beneficiation and jewelry manufacturing in this country employed outside mining 22,000 people. Today, only 2,000 people and shrinking. So, the issue of Section 26 is prevalent here. If you remember very well that under apartheid, the government revenue in terms of tax was primarily from companies and corporates. Today, it's individual tax that is government major compared to the government revenue. Companies don't pay tax anymore. Impairments year in, year out. For example, Mr. Sirhadi talked about the issue of Old Mutual. Old Mutual is delisting in London. Is going to come after being split up to list in South Africa and then take over 5 billion rand loss from England to come to South Africa, which means you and I's taxes, I won't cover that because they're not going to be paying tax until they make a profit of that over 5 billion rand. And I'm saying that is the oversight of the parliamentary committees that must say, make the point that the laws that you've passed are implemented and hold those who are not doing that accountable. I thank you, Chair.
Okay. Now you are at my discretion. Any questions of clarity? Honorable Mylan? Honorable Mtenjane? Honorable Vulmarans? Honorable Bulangolo, Honorable Kola, Honorable Kumalo, Honorable Meka. You just said in your report you've been coming in, so you understand the procedure. I don't have to repeat it. I'll repeat to those who are not familiar with this forum. But you'll load the questions, and then when they are finished, you'll choose who takes which one and who takes which one. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I just need a clarity from SAMDA, because I'm a little bit confused. You say that you represent junior miners. Which means that, and first of all, I have a big problem with the definition that is used for junior miners in South Africa, both by SAMDA and by the department. It doesn't fit with the definition of junior miners anywhere else in the world. Junior miners in the rest of the world doesn't have a monetary value. Junior miners typically are prospecting and exploration companies rather than actual mining production companies, and they at the start of the process, and then they sell off to a larger mining organization who can develop the mine, if you will. But that be that as it may. So you say that you represent junior miners, which then begs the question, if there is non-compliance in the industry, and in particular amongst junior miners, what are you doing to ensure compliance? What are you doing to promote the implementation of the MPRDA? Why is it not being implemented by those junior miners? I am also interested, you gave a percentage as at 2014 of just under 3% of the capital value of mining companies, of listed mining companies, being compliant with the 26% requirement. First of all, what is the percentage compliance amongst your constituency, in other words, amongst junior miners? Well, let's just say now. What is the percentage now compliance? When I say compliance, what is the percentage of market capitalization owned by historically disadvantaged people in your constituency? Secondly, what is the percentage owned by historically disadvantaged people in the broader mining context? I take what you say about transfer pricing very seriously. I think it's of a lot of value. I do think that this is something that needs to be raised with the finance portfolio directly, because it is something that SARS needs to take ownership of. And I think that SARS actually, during those discussions, were very clear about what they needed to do. They needed stronger investigative capabilities, because the issue is illicit flows of finances. And SARS said it's very difficult to prove that transfer pricing is taking place and that it's illicit. So I think that that's something that needs to go to SARS. I also think that I would have liked to have heard more about what your take is on our Mineral Rights Administration. You touched very briefly, Ms. Khadebe, on exploration. And we heard yesterday, and it's a fact, that exploration, prospecting, is dying off in South Africa. That there are not a lot of new mines being opened, there are not a lot of new shafts being sunk, etc., etc. So I would welcome some input on that aspect, but I would also particularly welcome some input on your position on the mining rights, the various rights, the prospecting rights, the exploration rights, and the actual mining rights, administration, the access to those rights, the ease of access to those rights. Because I think it's important to note that one of the challenges that we face as a country is that we have a very bureaucratic system. I had someone phone me today and say that they are battling and have been battling for 2 years to get a response from DMR on a mining rights application. And that's not acceptable. So I would welcome some input on that. Let me leave it there. I'm sure my colleagues have a number of other questions.
Okay. Babu Mtenjan.
Chairperson, thank you very much through you. Samda. The fact that our honorable woman, Miss Bridget, I would like to start by just saying your presentation here makes a lot of sense. In such a way that if I were the chairperson of this committee, I was going to have I was going to actually close this meeting because you said it already, everything. And then I just wonder, what are these other companies are coming to tell us, because you said it already. You got such a good experience, as you just told us, that you are 30 years in this business. So that tells everything. It's correct. In your opening, you said it correctly. It's what some of us have been saying, that minerals belongs to the people of South Africa. Well, the government is just the custodian. And then there is no more other thing you will want from you as such, or hold your account to come here and say, why didn't you do this, why didn't you do that? You just said it here in front of everyone here, that you've been coming to these committees many times, many years. It's not about you. If some of those things are not implemented, it's the government which is failing you. You just said it here, and we agree with you. The reason why the government is failing you, but let me first start by saying, don't worry. You will never be coming here again to repeat what you said today. It will never happen again. The problem here lies with the capitalism. That's the culprit. And we said it, some of us, we said it, that capitalism was never good, it's never good, it's not a good model in this government. Because capitalism is exactly what they are doing. These companies who are coming from Europe and all those things, they will never come here and do business and also want the people of South Africa to benefit and everything. That is why they do this price fixing. You put a very good example about the wine farm. And it's exactly what's happening here in Cape Town. So that is exactly what they are doing. The price fixing issue is a very serious issue, of which the government is not taking it serious, much as you are saying it. That's why I said you said it already. Now, yesterday I touched a certain issue here to this committee, but my honorable chairperson said, well, it will be a topic for another day. But that thing that I've touched yesterday, I will touch it again today. Nationalization. The reason why everything like this is happening is because this privatization thing, when you confront some of these companies and ask them why they don't do this or that, they tell you that they will go. They will pack and go as investors and what, they will leave South Africa. While the truth that we know is that they will never go. They will never go anywhere. These companies need us, need South Africa more than South Africa needs them. That is the truth, that is a fact. Now, the government just need to nationalize the mines and create a state bank. After nationalizing the mines, then it will tell every investor who comes in South Africa who want to invest that when you come here, you want to invest with us, we take so much percent and then you take so much percent. This issue of price fixing, it will come to an end in that way, with a good monitoring, of course. So there are a lot of things. I don't also want to waste more time, but much as you said, a lot of very important issues you said. There are a lot of other things which I've written here. I can quote one by one, but I don't want to necessarily chairperson waste the time, because I think we've got a long day today. The only little thing that I will ask from SAMDA. Yes, you told us exactly how you feel and how you operate and all those things. But then you did not necessarily told us also about Because as much as you are a company and owning mines, I would then want to know that within your mines, because remember there are people who are working there, those who call them workers. Now, what is the state of the safety in your mines? How do you take safety? Are you taking safety as a serious issue, or what is safety in terms of fatalities and all those things? How do the workers work? Because remember, we can't forget that as well. And then, how much are you trying to pay your workers? Is there any crisis like we used to see a crisis as a result of Marikana and all those things? Because I believe that you understand that people must share, or South Africans must share within the minerals. So are you meeting your workers halfway? I know that you won't be able also to pay them, say, the required salaries, because obviously you are also being subjected to this capitalism, as much as you already said it earlier on. Now, I just want to know how far are you meeting the workers in as far as wages are concerned, and their, environmentally, their place where they stay, your workers. Do you take care of your workers? How are you paying them their wages? And then lastly, are you empowering your workers? How is empowerment in your companies? Are you empowering your workers, those that are working to you? Are you trying to give them skills so that in case one of your mines or it closes because of this and that, are they going to be able to still go and find work somewhere else? And then lastly, how many people you may share with us? How many people have you employed in your companies, all in total? Especially South African, if I may say. How many did you employ? Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Honorable members, I hate to talk about time, but let's all look at our programs. Honorable Kola.
No, Honorable Numa, I don't want to go on record. That is why I'm not using this particular thing.
Don't worry, I'm the one who's chairing. You're standing correctly.
No, thanks, Chairman. I would want to start with the issue of beneficiation, which I think is key. So I would want to expand that. How do we then fast track the process of beneficiation of our precious metal, which I think is important? Second, I want to come on the issue of transfer pricing, because I feel that it is an impediment for economic growth and development. And for anybody to say it doubts that, I doubt. Mm-hmm. And it's corruption on a grand scale. It also distorts the actual value of profit. So how do you advise that the committee and the department deal with that particular challenge? Because I agree on what Honorable Chajan has said, because you can't be perpetually coming here to raise the issues that we are raising for years and years and years. We need to bring an end to this particular so we can be able to deal with economic growth and development. I also would like to understand that how is your business practice model fundamentally different from those of others, especially with regards to the workers, with regard to communities and other empowerment schemes that are there. Lastly, you just touched on this issue, but you did not venture much into it, of ghost towns and informal settlement. This is the most, according to me, this is the most painful part about South African mining. It is a lead to many of the social ills that we have. If you look at teenage pregnancy, unemployment, underdevelopment, it's rife in such areas. So how would you advise the committee and the department to deal with this particular challenge so that our people can live a dignified and qualified life? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. honorable members and the delegation from SAMDA. Firstly, I just want to congratulate Mrs. Hadebe or Ms. Hadebe for being part of the Pan-African Parliament, elected 3 weeks ago. Congratulations. A few things here, Chairperson. Well, one must first welcome your input. I think it was very intense, and it gives us a lot of ammunition going forward and what is expected of us. Because I think what the Chairperson had said earlier is that whenever the purpose of this gathering is that we sit and we discuss as a committee what you want us to actually achieve, because you are in the sector and you understand the dynamics more than us sitting here around this boardroom or in this chamber. Now, I just need clarity in terms of the ownership, where we were speaking of about the 51% and the 26%. If you can just dwell, maybe I was not listening carefully, but just dwell on that one, because you even spoke of a free market and whatnot. Can you just provide a greater clarity on that one? Number two will be the safety practice versus the production in your own firms that you are operating, because one understands that you are coming from, you are also producers as well. Now, we understand that there are laws where you find safety practitioners shutting down production and etc. because of A, B, and C. Why would you want to see change in that, but not compromising the safety, but eventually be productive at the end of the day, because we do not want to have fatalities and whatnot in our minds. What would you want us to see? What would you want to see change in that fact? And lastly, I want to actually welcome, because I said this yesterday when we were with the labor side of your industry, is that the establishment of factories and industries for things that we as South Africans can actually do. Because the fact that the commodities are here in South Africa but the end product is not produced here does not make any sense to anyone. So I just want to make a great welcome to that. And I said it yesterday that we are going to lobby for that, and we are going to, I personally, will also follow up on this issue and discuss it with the other portfolio committee members to see what we can actually do to say that we need to have a setup of factories, companies that will actually, because it will give our people jobs at the end of the day. So I just wanted to welcome this and also congratulate you and then seek clarity on these two questions. Thanks.
I'm saying I'm also welcoming the insightful presentation. And as a member of the committee, listening to Retemane Le Mekhadebe, I'm nearly trying to come to what my honorable colleague said, that you have rounded up what you are about. You have spent a number of years coming to the portfolio committee, coming to parliament, coming to joint meetings and so on. And you allude to the progressive legislation that this parliament has gone through. And you lament the lack of implementation. And I think that is the gist of your presentation, that given everything that has been done through Parliament, the question of implementing the sections that you have quoted, like 26 and so on, it's an impediment to the environment that we find ourselves in. You have touched on beneficiation, which is our issue as well. I wanted to get into the workforce, and for the sake of time, I won't get into it because my colleague has done it. I would want you to give an opinion on the licensing environment, the regime that entails the licenses. How does it affect you, and how do you see itself unfolding? Most of the mining take place in rural communities, and what is the impact of or what does the effect of our legislation have on you mining on those in those communities, and what because our workers come from those communities as well, so we are having legislation that deals with expropriation without compensation. Rural areas are affected there, and the mining operations are also on that. How does it affect the association? Now, having been in those meetings, Chairperson, for the past couple of years, according to yourself, what would you think? Are we unwilling, both as ministers or as parliament? Because you must be sitting in those committees, you must be sitting in those boards, you have said the same thing, and according to your assessment, what would be the reason why we are not implementing it? Are we averse to such? Does it have any economic effect that we are fearing? Because I cannot see you going to those meetings, sitting on those boards for so many years, and we are still where we are. Retemane said we are worse off than we were before. Out of the numbers that you quoted and saying you are only left with about 2,000 people around the beneficiation environment, it's actually worrisome. And according to yourselves, what would be the issue so that we can also have it? And when we deal with the ministers, we deal with legislation, we take that into account. Thanks.
No offense. I'll also join my colleagues to welcome the presentation. Without waste my time, because I'm covered there. But you raised two challenges that you need to clarify us. What do you mean about that? Number one is a lack of transformation within the mining industry. If you can just clarify us so that we can understand, because when it's not good when we raise this after 25 years. Number two, you raise a lack of implementation of the NDP. So if you can say something so that we can understand, where can we assist, not to assist you, but to assist ourselves and the people of South Africa. So mine is short, Chip.
Thank you, Chair. We want to welcome the presentation and take note that it came from a woman. I don't want to think because you were here yesterday, you went and reconfigured your team to have a woman and a young person with you. We are highly appreciative of that. I think that's the first point I want to make. The second point I want to make is that no one here who came to present should feel that they are not appreciated in this committee. I do know that Keita Mtenjwan was on a lighter note saying she did well, or the presentation was of a high quality. no one must feel that they are not welcome to present after her. Like he said it on a lighter note. We appreciate all of you very well. Of course, we'll be biased towards you because, and we're unashamedly biased towards the presentation because it is rooted deeply on the preamble of what our constitution as a republic is imbued. So we are not breaking a law or mincing our words when we say we are biased towards the presentation. We, I think taking it from Honorable Bilankulu, you must go as far as, if you don't mind, giving us those that are not transforming, the lists of them, so that when we push, because you are asking for our assistance, when we push those who are supposed to ensure that there is transformation, we have targets. Targets are very important. It's only 5 years that we have here. You have came here when there were different administration. We don't want to promise that you are not going to come here on the next administration, but we don't have a systematic way of working in terms of looking at the targets. Give us the list so that we are working in a very structured way to look at the transformation. Our passion as this committee is transformation. We want to see it happen, especially in the mining sector. We want to see it happening. So assist us in that regard so that when we leave here after 5 years, we are remembered for having transformed the industry. One thing that we are happy and we think that other presenters should follow suit is to be bold, like the chairperson said yesterday, bold on what you want us to do. You told us what you would want us to do, and we look into those things and do them. We are very pleased that on my last point, we are very pleased that your presentation avoided a blame game in terms of the failures and the successes of government, to an extent where you even mentioned that you are very happy that the minister that is coming now has just started, and you are, being a unionist himself, will assist us do better. I just want to appreciate that you played far from that angle of playing a blame game of any government that is in charge of our republic. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll share the questions and we will quickly respond. We have you, sir, asking a very important question. What is it that we are doing to make sure that we become effective in terms of our mining industry? And what is it that we are doing to make sure that the implementation takes place? And let us just share to you who we are. We cannot own more than 26% equity participation. And also what makes it very difficult, we can own more, but the charter says not less than 26 we can earn. And what makes we own, so what makes it very difficult is that when you are a BEE, you have to be broad-based. So it's very important to be the company that is going to actually make changes, because the majority is the company that owns the balance of the six, 70% now. You know, we made until 2014 in our assessments. Mm-hmm. Now it's now 30% with the new amendments. So you find that you get minority powers that doesn't give you majority powers, and you get outvoted. I personally have had so many problems where one of the companies that I refused to sign an agreement in terms of amendments of the shareholders agreement, and I refused, and the company expelled me as a shareholder, and I didn't go to the DMR and do anything. But the good thing is the DMR then asked what had to look, because if you expel someone as a shareholder, you've got to employ Section 11 of the Act. You've got to go to the minister and ask for permission to do any changes with your equity participation. And when the DMR asked in that meeting, I wasn't there, where is your partner? They say, no, she's not. Why? Because she wasn't going to sign this agreement where we're not going to give 40% black managers within 5 years' time and 10% women participation and all that. And the DMR says, but this is the charter, this is the act. And then also something else, you find that you personally have a problem in terms of your own black people saying, umlingwami, muyege. This is my white person living. And you find that, funny that the very white people were the ones that helped me as a black woman. These white man managers used to sneak me underground when the law was saying no black or white woman has to go underground. And the black managers used to. Then the protocol is Afrikaans, my Setswana. And as you Afrikaans, you don't have to talk and pray, then you work. So I'm just saying, but I also learn. So I'm just saying it will take time for us to explain what the problems are. But we have the law. And what are we going to do to implement the law is make sure that we come to you. And one of the portfolio committee chairs who had a minister of mine who would not even ask a consult with her, didn't know what to do. Then I said to her, go to Tribal Manual because of Anazuma, Jeff Hadebe, they've been there since Mandela's time, ask them what you should do. And the minister told the chairperson, we are supposed to come to Parliament and report to you. Anytime Parliament calls us, we have to jump, So you have the powers to ask for accountability to happen. So use those powers. And I'm not saying the ministers were always wrong. I'm saying implementation of the law has to be done. Look at all these clauses of the law. Make sure that you have a joint committee. What is it that you should do? Have a joint committee like Joan Fabs did. She was a very good committee chair. She called trade and industry and minerals, and she had a three-tier joint committee of finance, and they looked at the issues of transfer pricing. That's why Judge Dennis Davis was. But we said we will not ever become party to this. Our partners, who are a foreign company, did not pay tax. And that's why we say no. We investigated the transfer pricing and we refused to sign the audit to financial statements. I refused. And I said, I'm not going to do it. And then you know what happened? They wanted to call me a delinquent partner and delinquent man. Then I went to Parliament and I brought it to Parliament and transfer pricing was looked into. Something else. I used to own Shaft Sinkers. I refused to become a shareholder in the foreign listed companies. Because I say the primary listing must be in South Africa. Let's have the primary listing in South Africa and the secondary listing can be anywhere else. What did I do? On the 24th of December 2010, I sold my shares in South Sinkers because I wasn't prepared to have a company with a foreign listing as a primary listing outside South Africa, created by Anglo in 1961. When Anglo went offshore listed, we bought the company. We built mines all over the world. Give me a piece of mine for a piece of land. Close your eyes and I'll build your mine. And this is the kind of capacity we had. And we became owners in other mines. So I'm just saying there is a commitment. You've got to preach what you are, and you've got to become who you want to be. You can't now go and say, don't do X and Y, then you're going to have a foreign listing offshore. I'm not saying it's wrong, but the people like us, especially people like me and my family, or Peter and one of us, have now a foreign listed company doing the primary listing. Then we say to the world, we do not have confidence in our environment. We don't have confidence in our country. So these are some of the economic activism, social agenda, political and economic agenda as South Africans that we have to do. And be loyal to your country. And the rest will follow. We're making money as in the right way. Producers, Why black or poor? Now, black producers are few, and let me not tell you, don't have the impression that white people that worked were bad. As I said, when we started at Samba, it was the white companies that couldn't have shares as rich as we called terminal. So what is it that we did? They came and told us in Samba, there were more in our board, that listen, we can't get shares in Richard Bill Coal Terminal because the majors are the ones that own the terminal. So what did we do? We created a terminal committee of stakeholders chaired by the DMR. I started chairing it first at Samba, and then the DMR took it over, and now we created another 9 million tons enhancement of Richards Bay Coal Terminal. It went to 91 million tons. So these are the things that we're looking at in terms of assisting. Peter, there are so many questions. Answer the others. And I'll also answer here and there, you know.
Sure. Thank you. I can answer your question about 3% new complaint. I think you mistook the slide. Is 3% ownership of the listed. Yeah. Now the compliance part of it is not equal to the 3%. What I'm trying to say is that we have a mixed bag of members. We have those members who are on their own, others being pure black owned, and we have those who have stakes in the majors. Now, as part of the majors, they may not be compliant. Come to a question. But as the individual black-owned companies, one, in terms of employment equity, they're compliant. In terms of adhering to the laws, in terms of environmental and everything else, there's no question about whether you are small or not. You have to adhere to the regulations of the country. So there is no exception. Since you are a junior miner, you're not supposed to adhere to the minerals, to the environmental laws and all that. The issue of transfer pricing, you alluded to the fact that SARSET was difficult to prove, and I beg to differ. I'll tell you why. There was a framework agreement that was signed with the presidency, chaired by the then president was Mr. Zuma. When he took over, Mr. Kanomatante became the actual person, but now he took over after that. We raised this issue at that engagement. I think even the chamber was present. And the then president said to Mr. Koran, there, who was still the Minister of Finance, say, go and look into what Samba is saying. They went to do the investigation. 10 companies, this is my one, 10 companies were looked into. 5 of them in mining. SARS came back with a report and said, when we're looking into this, we recouped 5.4 billion rand back into the fiscus. Of that, 70% came from the 5 mining companies. It was presented. Which says, only 10 companies will recoup 5 billion rand in a matter of about 4 or 5 months. Imagine if they said, let us do a complete overlook at this thing. We would have recouped more than maybe 300 billion. But what happened? Oh, yes, thank you very much. Just filed. That report is there. DMR has got that report. This parliament, I think, has got that report from SARS that time. So the issue of saying it is difficult to prove, that's not true. The issue of transfer pricing, it is not illegal. But there are certain things that they are doing in terms of profit base erosion and profit shifting. That's where the problem came out. And they got the money back and put into fiscal, 5.4 billion rand. So it's important to know that there is, coming to Mr. Paul Maran's question, are we unwilling? Well, this is my personal view, it's not Samda's view. There is no appetite from those who are supposed to enforce the law to go hit hard at this very culprit. For me, that's what, no appetite at all, Mr. Omaras. Because if there was, when they saw that report, which was even going back to the presidency, we're sitting like this, all stakeholders with the president was giving to him. That's what he said to it. So now, and why it wasn't saying that, open the whole thing, let's look at all the exports and all that. That's not a problem. The issue of the Mineral Rights Administration. In 2008, we tried to put a Kadeska. whereby if you one stop, you open a bunch, you find everything else. It never worked. And the then minister was Mr. Shabangu, then went out of her way and even suspended for almost 6 months the processing of applications for either prospecting mining rights. And in the case of Mpumalanga, it went to 9 months to try and do an audit of exactly who owns what, where, and stuff like that. Now, honourable members, here's the truth. That audit report has not been made public. It was done. Government paid millions for it to be done, but it was not made public. And the reason why I'm saying it not made public is because it exposed the rats in terms of transformation in this country. Because everyone was suspended for 6 months, more like 9 months. We must look at who owns what where. Bills were paid. So, coming back to Mr. Formarans, are they saying we don't have appetite? And we think about state capture maybe? Nobody do anything about it. But that report, it exists. It is in the department's hands. The president also has it. And I assume if you don't, you can ask the department when they come here to give you that report, because it was done. And it will tell you that in Mine X, in what, this company owns it. This is how it is owned. This is the shareholding. This is the social labor plan for it. Is it being done with the social labor plan? Are they in line with the money license, money and right? All those things are in that report. Okay, sir. And then on the issue of Mr. Ntejana, that the problem lies with capitalism. That I will not argue, sir, because I think the chart of the NC said a lot about it. So I want to be a politician about the chart of the NC about nationalization of the banks and mines and minerals and all that. That I leave to you, two politicians. You asked about what we do in terms of our mines, safety. And I still repeat, safety was not junior or minor. The law of the land is the law of the land. We all have to adhere to it. We have tried our best. I'll make an example in terms of how we meet our people. In 2003, when we went into actual iron ore mining, I found people who were working in the mining that for more than 20 years, who had more experience than the people that I employed as my, in those days, shift bosses who were white. Then I said, no, the law allows blacks not to go and get a platinum license, because you would not be a shit boss unless you a platinum license. So I took four of my black guys, they went, did the exam, got a platinum license. And then I promoted two of them immediately to become shit bosses as well. Lo and behold, the three shit bosses I had and the three shit I had were all white. Two of them resigned, because what I did was, I said, you have been here for more than 20 years. But you are any less than this guy who has been here for almost 14 years. And you taught him, this white district boss, the work. But because he got a certificate, he's any more than you. So now what I'm going to do, I'm going to do what you call equal pay for equal work done. So I took him from what he was earning to earn the same as the white man. Now the white man says, you can't make me any same thing with that ducky. They resigned. But he didn't tell you. Those guys became one of my best shift bosses. It goes that far back. We're trying our best in our own individual companies. But remember, we have other members, not only ours. It's just by coincidence that we are in this organization, also being members of the industry. But there are others who are trying to. I'll make an example. The issue of the less than 3%. 2014 was 3%. Let's take the issue of Exxaro, for instance. Exxaro, in our list, it showed you the so-called black ownership. We all know that after the 10-year lock-in period, the ownership fell from 51% to 30%, and only 12% an incumbent. So which means that status in this list of the JSE has gone down from 3%. So again, I repeat, we are worse off than we were. And again, another problem challenge that we have here is the people, the majors, when they want to disinvest, they will not sell to independent black people. They play, and I said this before, they sell to their own surrogates, user suspects. Case in point, I just heard yesterday that Seriti is getting
That's the mining for South 32. And the same city that got the mining rights for Anglo-American coal. So I'm not saying, maybe I'm jealous, but that's not the issue. Why is it that even after it is said and done, those very people, for instance, when they own, when they sell, they make money and then they run. And then comes this issue of saying, once empowered, always empowered, because this guy sold and ran. So you have to make the point that this Section 11 issue is being incumbent, is being prohibited by the exception in terms of listed companies. Because it says if you're a listed company, you cannot be ruled under Section 11. Because you can sell your shares in the stock exchange, how can you be doing that? We have to look at that. Because remember, the mining rights, the minerals, belong to the people. So you're very glad to see how it's done.
Also, in terms of the definition of junior miners, your question, when we created the Junior Mining Chamber, we asked the Mineral and Energy Policy Center to do a research. The mining industry in South Africa. The Mineral and Energy Policy Center did the research, and then they came up, two researchers, and they came up with the definition of junior mining, and they also came up in part, you know, after that, told us what to do in terms of structuring ourselves. Something else also, SARS. You were saying the issue of transfer pricing, as you rightfully, and I agree with you, it is a SARS and Treasury function, but unfortunately, and very sadly, we were never asked by the Treasury Portfolio Committee to ever make a presentation. To the extent that we were so upset, it was driven by our chair, who was very committed, and Joan Fuffs is the chair of DTI. So they really worked and put it. And we even had to look at the clauses of the law that made the beneficiation of that affected DTI. And there are lots of clauses in the mining law that affect DTI. And so that DTI could also come on board, and they pushed it without chair. And to the extent that one day, my brother from EFF, I'm not an EFF voter, but I was so upset, I met the portfolio committee chair, and I said to him, you know what, I'm going to leave my party that I'm voting for, and I'm going to become an EFF member for 4 days in parliament. I'll go to Julius and say, give me 3 days in parliament so that we, Sanda, can make the presentation. And then from there, I'll see where DA is good and become DA members for those 3 days and go back to where we come from and vote for our country, for our parties, because this is not, this is what we're doing in terms of challenging the status quo. But, unfortunately, it wasn't necessary to do it because then portfolio committees met and they looked into it and they decided then to have Judge Dennis Davis look into this transfer pricing issue, and we are having something happening. But I mean it. If we see a particular political party doing well, we will then leave our mining office and then say, can we become your members for a week if the law allows it, and just push those things in and put them in and then go back to where we come from, because I don't want to be a politician. But anyway, also, in terms of the people that we employ and the money that we give our workers, every year, as you say, the industry do meet, stakeholder union and chambers, they meet and they agree on what the labor in terms of remuneration package will be. And then we all succumb and apply those rules and regulations. And also there's something in terms of ghost towns. How do we alleviate those things? No, it's here. Okay. Let me just do it, and then you do what I'm not doing. In terms of ghost towns, you see, we have a mining law that says that the minister must create a board. And the good thing is, the first board that was created, I must say, we were very, very blessed. We had the industry leaders from both the chamber and organized labor, and government departments, as the board says, must be created. And these industry leaders were very unique. And, you know, the sad thing is, many of them left, but I must say, you fortunately still have Roger Baxter in the Minerals Council, who has a world of experience, and we have us in SAMDA. So, you know, all these other older people retired that with the creation of this law. Now, what we would like to see is to let that board be functional. and make the board strong. We had a problem where ministers were not, one or two ministers, actually one in particular, was not having a board. She then became the minister and she didn't have a board as per the act. And only after a year or two the board was sick. Because we started asking a lot of questions in that board. We wanted the department people to tell us about the ownership profile. And we didn't know that some people might be compromised. We were just trying to check what is the compliance in terms of ownership, what is in compliance in terms of 40%, what is in compliance in terms of the charter requirements at that time. And the minister got rid of some of the board members and didn't have a board. So then we decided in the employer ID amendment, let at least the board not be the one that will be appointed by the minister. To look at how other boards are appointed. Your parliament may do it like other boards in other government-owned businesses are appointed. And in our MPRDA presentation, we did make an amendment. We did make those comments. So if that board functions very well, then we're in Parliament in partnership with the board. And our job as business and labor is to make sure that the right people sit on that board. Then that board will look at all the elements of the charter. Because when I was the deputy chair of the board and we all sat on the board with Roger Baxter and Peter and all of us at that time, we made sure that the subcommittee of the board had an element of the charter. So there was a charter element on beneficiation. We looked into it. And experts of beneficiation were then employed in that. And there was also an element of finance and on ownership. We looked at creating a resources bank. And we said, why should the farmers own a bank, which is the land bank? We can't have a mining bank. And then we also look at full through sales stock exchange. So in partners, so all those elements of the charter became the subcommittees of the board. And with the partnership with the chamber, we really made strides. And I must say, we do disagree as an industry here and there, but when we come together, we do then blend and collectively stick to what we have agreed to. So let us not give the impression that South Africa is going astray. We have laws and we have companies that should implement. Help us to make sure that those penalties, those implementation, get enforced for those that are not implementing. And don't be left with the idea that it's a black and white thing. As I say to you, the primary listing companies that are South African owned, many of them are white, and they are not doing a lot of bad that we talk about. They try and comply to the rules and regulations of what the Reserve Bank says and what our mining law are saying. And also, Peter, is there anything else that you want to talk about?
Okay, you've got only 5 minutes.
Okay, that's 5 minutes. On this, Mr. Kuna, on the issue of the coast towns, I think everybody's aware about where Johannesburg is. Johannesburg was a mining town. The mining has ceased almost 30 years, 40 years. There's no mining in Johannesburg, but it's the economic hub of the country. Who says to you, how did it survive post-mining? It's not America. It is there. All you need is to replicate the success of Johannesburg into all these other towns where the mining takes place. So post-mining, the town still survives. And I think Robert Fokeng is trying to do it. They're saying, let us have programs and issues in place that when platinum is finite, our area and our people still prosper. That is why even the issue of all the people of Robert Fokeng, if you are a Mofokeng, you get bursary to go and study anything that you want. So that says even after mining, you can still be a doctor, you don't have to be involved in mining, you can be a lawyer, you can do other things. So I think if we can look at why Johannesburg is so successful and try to say, take part of the successes that Johannesburg has and put it back next to the mining operator when mining takes place. Because quite frankly, let's be honest, it was very funny that diamonds are in Kimberley and in Northern Cape, but the economic hub of jewelry industry was in Johannesburg. Is dead now, but in at a height is higher than 22,000 people. It was in Gauteng as opposed to Northern Cape. On the issue of how do we advise on the issue of transfer pricing? Again, if we look at our presentation to the joint sitting of those three committees, we said one of the best ways to stop this is to have the receipting, the invoicing of the export done here.
the invoicing. The receipting of the money based on the invoice done in this country. Then you will say, wait a minute, why are you on an invoice? You are selling your coal for $38 when the listing price today is $600. So the receipts are not in line with the value. Then you stop it. But what's happening here is just export. The receipt of the money is in an offshore company. But the invoicing is done here at less than the economic value of the export. So we're saying if the invoice is done here, receipting is done here, those companies that do marketing, today we're in a global world, in IT. You don't have to be in Hong Kong to do an invoice. It can be done here in South Africa as well. So that issue of saying, no, we don't have the capacity to do that, it's not that anymore. We can do it. We have the necessary skills, computers and all that. That can be done here. There's no need for us to have an offshore trading companies. We stop that, we do that. Finish. Okay, there's only...
I'm one person who's good in facilitation. Can we hold it? Can you hold it? No. You remember what I said. Even if you come 15 times that door, saying one and the same thing, one day you'll get the breakthrough. It's not the last time. It's not the last time. Let me tell you now what I'm thinking, so that when I relax you, you are just coming to greet us and say, please, as you do your work, take this. I'm definitely sure you were saying to others, saying there is no appetite. Sometimes you have appetite when you don't know whether you will eat or not. It's another matter. But we can assure you, there is nothing. These members are coming back. We don't want someone who is going to leave and say, "Ish, we were not given time." Amongst other things that we'll consider. We won't get tired, even if the others, the committees are still there. We will still repeat the process. Let's just say maybe the weakness is that we started the process a little bit late. Now these members still have to go through the legacy report, which contains, amongst other things, those elements. So we'll never suppress anyone. I told others yesterday that even if we disagree, unfortunately we have a duty and a responsibility to listen to that person. So we will find time. The chamber, you are called Minkosa. I find it very difficult to call you Minkosa because there was a meeting that nearly ended before it could start with the dispute of the name. I don't know how far you have gone with that. But we will give you, like that's why I said, we'll give you, don't worry, we'll adjust. We'll give you up until 1:15. If you are not businesslike, it's up to you. Okay. Thank you.
Hi, hey, Nala. How are you? Is it? Haven't seen you in a while.
Yes.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity to engage. I certainly like your approach, which is meet and greet, and we certainly from the Minerals Council side, we don't call ourselves Mincosa, we call ourselves Minerals Council South Africa. We were renamed and rebranded last year, so 129-year-old organization, and we've gone through a rebranding exercise. But we're going to quickly introduce the team. Sitting on my right-hand side is Dr. Tula Balfour. She's our head of health in the Minerals Council, and last year she was voted as one of the top 100 most influential women in the world mining industry, just to give an illustration of the capacity of people that we have in our team. To her immediate right is Nick Lesufi, senior executive. He deals with health, environment, and legacies. The team behind me, I can't twist my neck, Fundiswa Ndaba. She's one of our senior policy analysts sitting in the middle. Stefina Modao is our head of environment. Again, both ladies are part of our very capable team. And Aubrey sitting on the right-hand side behind me, he's our senior manager in Cape Town. He runs our Cape Town office and spends a lot of time in Parliament engaging with the study groups, with the policy committee chairs, et cetera, et cetera. So quick introduction of our team. And again, thank you very much. Our objective here today is just to take stock of where the industry is from our perspective. I've now been in this industry for just under 30 years, so it's a fairly long time. I don't have the grey hairs to show it. I think you know, it's people like Bridget that have been keeping me young in terms of our enthusiasm for the industry and for the country. But, you know, obviously we're going to also just ask all the parliamentarians to fasten their seatbelts, because the ride that we're going to take you on from a presentation perspective is not going to be necessarily a pretty one. I think Minister Montash, he's renamed me Roger Frank Baxter, and we've renamed him Samson Gwede Candid Montash in terms of being very direct about the issues. Because let's face the facts. Let's not beat around the bush. Let's focus on the critical issues. And one thing that we would implore the committee to engage on is obviously to look at the facts. And you've created that opportunity for us to engage and deal with the facts. We've got a fairly detailed presentation. All of us are going to contribute to the presentation because we're all experts. The team are experts in different areas. So let me just jump straight in. I'm not going to go through the overview up front. What do? We represent mining and exploration companies in South Africa. We provide both strategic and advisory support to the companies. We facilitate interaction amongst the members. For example, yesterday we had a full-day strategic session of our platinum leaders, so that's all the platinum CEOs that are members of the Minerals Council. We act as an advocate on behalf of the industry on fully mandated positions that we take back into our engagements with a wide range of different stakeholders. Parliament, so I certainly have been many times to Parliament and very much respect the institution of Parliament. We engage significantly with government, but many different government departments. On carbon taxes, we're engaging with Treasury, on environment, environmental affairs, on skills development, higher education, and obviously R&D and technology. So, and then we do some collective bargaining on behalf of the gold and coal sectors as part of our services we offer our members. So just to give you a quick illustration, we have 78 direct members. We also represent over 200 emerging and junior miners. So we represent both the exploration industry. These are members that are part of our emerging junior and emerging miners leadership forum, which is chaired by a gentleman called Errol Smart, who is also the CEO of Orion Minerals, who's trying to develop a deposit in the Northern Cape, as an example. So we do have representation of over 200 entities, 200 companies directly, and a wide diversity of membership, big, small, exploration right up to the majors, and we represent about 90% of mineral sales and about 90% of employment in the industry. So over 400,000 people we represent from an employment perspective, over 90% of the value of mineral production. We have a team of Mineral Council office bearers. The president is Nkulisi Mgojo. Our vice presidents are Zaneli Matlala. She's just been elected in our May AGM. We've got Steve Peary as vice president. He's from Royal Bafokeng Platinum as CEO. We've got Andile Sanku, who's a vice president, who is the senior rep of Anglo-American South Africa. And we've got Neil Fronman, who is vice president from Sibanye Stillwater. In terms of our own internal management team, we've got 15 people in our management team. You can see their faces on the screen. 33% of our team are ladies in the management team. We've got one-third of the team are white South Africans, and the rest are black South Africans driving the agenda for positive change. So we... all the people that are in this team are people that should be the best in their sphere, in the country, in Africa, and if not in the world. So when I want to know anything about environmental regulation around the world or TB health-related issues, on the environment side, I'll chat to Stefina right behind me. On the health side, I'll chat to Tutula. She's the lady that's got all the facts and figures at her fingertips. So just a quick snapshot. I'm not going to go through all the detail. Our vision is very simple. To hashtag, it's effectively to make sure that mining matters, but our hashtag is making mining matter. We have a value statement. We have a membership compact. I can tell members here today that we have rejected two membership applications on the basis that we believe the companies concerned didn't meet the standards required in terms of our values, and we have terminated a company's membership. That company was Koornfontein Coal Mines, for not being able to meet the membership compact. So just to highlight, we do ensure that our members meet the standards required of our membership compact. All the CEOs have signed their own version of the membership compact, and we have those displayed in the Minerals Council, and the companies have them displayed at their offices. We have a strategic plan around making mining matter. Strat Goal 1 is about pressing a reboot button and helping to re-engage with stakeholders. That's been very much part of our process. Our Strat Goal 2 is creating this enabling legislative, policy, regulatory framework and operating environment to really enable us to be a successful mining industry and to, in particular, enable South Africa to realize its true economic and transformational potential. We have Strat Goal 3 around implementing a positive contribution model, including showing tremendous work have been doing with, for example, communities, our entire transformation drive, etc. Strat Goal 3 is leading by example, and that's demonstrating progress in areas like transformation, safety, and we'll show you some detailed slides of our membership on the safety front in a moment. And then our fifth goal is just to make sure that the organization is consistently improving. And just on the beneficiation side, obviously we invite the portfolio committee, when you're ready, Chairperson Luzipho, to come and visit the Minerals Council building where 5 years ago we installed the first platinum baseload fuel cell in Africa. It runs off Egoli gas, generates about 100 kilowatts of electricity and effectively helps run our building, and that shows our commitment to the types of technologies that can help change our world as South Africans. Honourable Chairperson, South Africa's economic potential and transformational potential from mining is huge. In terms of the Fraser Institute survey, we ranked 30 out of 83 jurisdictions in terms of our mineral potential. I did hear Bridget saying, you know, we've got the minerals, everyone wants to be here. We can have a debate about that at a particular point. But the point is that if we assume best practice at a global level, South Africa should be in the top one-third, roughly, of mining jurisdictions from a competitiveness point of view. 2 years ago, we were ranked 81 for our policy scorecard. That means a view on how good our policy rating is. We rated 81 out of 91 jurisdictions. Over the last 12 months, we've seen an improvement of 25 places. We now ranked 56th out of 81 jurisdictions. We're still in the bottom half, but I just want to emphasize the point that we've made some progress as a country, and that's particularly been since Minister Mantash has been implementing a series of reforms. Our investment attractiveness rating has moved from 48 to 43. It still puts us in the bottom half, but we're getting closer to getting into the top half, because you need to be in the top half if you want to attract the long-term capital that you really need for the mining sector. But let's just paint the brutal facts as they stand. If you look at construction of new mines, that's fallen by over 51% since 2011. We have a very limited project pipeline of new projects coming on stream, and that's because we account for just such a small share of global exploration expenditure, 1% of global total, and of that 1%, only 10% of the 1%, or 0.1% of the global total, is actually going into greenfields exploration, trying to find new stuff, as opposed to brownfields, which is proving up around existing mines. Net fixed investments fallen by 72%. Mining as a percent of GDP has gone from about 15% in 1990. It's about 7% today. And just to highlight the point that if you're comparing apples with apples, real mining GDP in 2018 is smaller than it was in 1994. So the sector's shrunk as a percent of GDP on a relative basis and in terms of absolute GDP terms. So just showing a couple of quick slides. On the left-hand side, the slide is disaggregated fixed investment in mining. You can see we had a big fall-off from about 2012. We started seeing a little bit of a stabilization to recovery in it. Our slide on the right shows the trend in mining production. We effectively, our mining production trends are about the 2000 level. So we're not shooting the lights out, and it is an issue that we need to think about. If I look at the next slide, which is about rising prices. So more recently, we've obviously seen weaker rand exchange rate. We've seen rising prices, and what we've seen is fixed investment in mining and our production trends hasn't caught up to the fact that prices are improving. And on the right-hand side, just to highlight, we account for 8.3% of Africa's exploration budget. Africa accounts for about 14% of the global total, which means that we effectively account for 1% of global total And in our view from the Minerals Council side, we think that we should be sitting at least at a 5% of global total level. So we're way below our potential on exploration, and we'll give you a few ideas on that in a moment. So let me hand over to Tutula. She's going to give us a perspective on the safety side and then on the health side. So Tutula, across to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Morning, Honorable Chairperson and the committee. Roger has told you about the economics of the mining, and I'm going to concentrate more on the people, because we believe that we cannot mine if we don't have safe, if we cannot guarantee safety, and the best that we can do is to ensure that our employees are healthy. So if I start off with the safety, we have an aspiration which is to ensure that every employee and contractor returns from work unharmed every day. And we actually do that. We do that through the Mine Health and Safety Council, which is the tripartite institution we belong to. We also do it through the Minerals Council and at a company level. So if we look at our performance on safety, we believe that we are making progress. If you compare from where we were in 2003, 270 deaths, and right now, 2018, 81. We, however, have a major concern in the last 2 years in that we regressed. If you note, 2016 was our best year in terms of the numbers. It was still a very high number, 73 people, because we are striving for there should be no death due to mining. And therefore, in the last 2 years, we have had to have a step change, you know, looking at we are not at the levels where we were, the trend is reversing. And we therefore put in extra measures through our CEO Zero Harm Forum, and we are now in the next 2 years going to concentrate, focus mainly on eliminating fatalities. We are doing fairly in terms of progress this year. We think that at least we have made an improvement. Compared to last year, we have a 49% improvement over the same time last year. Where we are this year, we are on about 28 people that we have lost in the industry versus 55 last year at this time. We hope, therefore, that this trend will continue and that, again, we will get back to where we were, which was, you know, the consistent declines in a number of people that are being lost in the industry. We have, therefore, that holistic approach to the elimination of fatalities and also on health. We have a number of studies we are doing on health to fully understand how people and why people are dying from occupational diseases. And, of course, we recognize that far more people die from health than safety because they die at home and, you know, those deaths are not seen. On the health front, we have made progress again. There are three key conditions we track: TB, silicosis, and noise-induced hearing loss. Although, of course, noise-induced hearing loss doesn't lead to disease, to death, but at least you don't want, the worst thing you can have is not to be able to hear. And so, again, we link ourselves with the industry milestones through Mine Health and Safety Council. We have these milestones. I think when you meet the Mine Health and Safety Council, they'll take you through those in more detail. These are for 2024 targets we have set for ourselves. And on TB, we are seeing massive reductions. We have also, as the Minerals Council, got a program called My Service Health Program, which is specific actions we are taking on reducing TB, and it has, you know, really borne fruit to the extent that we think we will be able to meet our target, which is in the mining industry, our TB rates should be similar to those of South Africa. We also have a number of initiatives on reductions for dust, both silica and coal dust. And again, on noise-induced hearing loss is to eliminate the machinery that produces that noise, or at least to ensure that people are not exposed to that noise. As a developing country, which is now becoming a developed country, we have diseases of developed countries, which is the chronic diseases of lifestyle, like diabetes, hypertension. And so with the DMR, again, the DMR is also aware of this, and they are ensuring that we report on both TB and HIV, and now also on all of these other diseases, chronic diseases of lifestyle. And I must say that it's been very successful, and it does crystallize when you can see the statistics, of these diseases. And again, we have MYOSIS, Masoise Health Program, which is looking at how do we reduce chronic diseases of lifestyle in our employees. I would just, in closing, like to mention, something related to the future of health services in our sector. As some of you might know, mining provides significant health services. At one point, most of the companies had their own hospitals. This is reducing. A number of them are no longer having those hospitals. But I think maybe an area which is bringing uncertainty is the national health insurance, in terms of how we will be impacted by the national health insurance. We are, however, engaged through BUSA on the national health insurance to see how we should be adjusting to ensure that we are in line with the future national health insurance. So on that note, I will hand over to Fundiswa.
Afternoon, everyone, I'm not going to greet everyone, all protocol observed. I'm quickly just going to take us through the transformation journey in the mining industry. So I was involved in the mining charter negotiations with the DMR, SAMDA, as well as the labor unions, and from March 2018. The communication and the engagement, we must say, has been extremely great, especially from the DMR side, and we continue to engage with the DMR on some of the outstanding issues because we understand that transformation is a business imperative, but more than that, because transformation, growth, and competitiveness are critical for the sector and should be used for the benefit of all South Africans. As SAMDA has already stated, the MPRDA is the principal act of the industry, and it gives effect to the mining charter. The mining charter, though, is a policy document and not legislation. So on the actual mining charter, there are five elements. I'm going to speak on three. My colleagues will then also touch on human resource development as well as mine community development. So on the three that I'm going to speak about, it's ownership, employment equity, but looking more specifically at women in mining, and then the last one would be inclusive procurement. And I guess we've heard this morning as well from SAMDA that, the mining charter 2010 had a target of 26%, which was for HDSA, which is historically disadvantaged South Africans. When we did a survey in 2016 as the mining industry, and it was a survey of about 28 of the mining companies, which represented 70% of production in South Africa, though. We found that of the sample, the average HDSA ownership was 39%. So the target was set at 26%, but our members had, on average, a 39% HDSA shareholding. And again, this is based on continuing consequences, or the recognition of continuing consequences of historical transactions. Again, this is sometimes a debate because we're talking about once empowered, always empowered, and this is how we recognize, or this is how we account for ownership in the mining industry. Then in 2018, during the charter negotiations, the percentage was increased, and we were in support of this, for new mining rights to 30%, so from 26% to 30%. And it includes a 5%, which is a carried interest for employees, a 5%, which is another carried interest for communities, and the remaining balance, or 20%, which is for entrepreneurs. And of this 20%, there's a further 5%, which is preferably should be distributed to women, or women should participate in ownership with this this percentage. And I think when we're speaking about, it is also Women's Month, so we thought, okay, let's also give you a few of our stats or information in terms of where women are in mining as the industry. Again, there is great support for women participation, or greater participation by women. And the mining chart has kind of highlighted women in three areas. So it is in ownership with the 5% ownership, 5% shareholding. It is also under employment equity. For the first time, the mining charter actually sets specific targets for women. And these range from 20% at board level to 30% at junior management. The third area where women has also been included, especially on the, is under the inclusive procurement area, where we're saying there are now targets specifically for women-owned companies for both capital goods as well as on services. But while we're speaking of women in mining, so what we've done is in the information that we have, which is from the 2018 stats, women accounted for 13% of the workforce. So we still have a long way to go. I mean, the economically active population for women is at about 45%. And if we look at the actual numbers, so we look at the national demographics of the country, women account for 51% of South Africa. But be that as it may, in 2018, in the mining space, we had 16% of women in top management and 18% at junior management. And as the mining industry, we're saying, yes, we understand the targets are the targets are going to be stretched. If you're looking at where we are, so we're looking at, let's say, 18% at junior management. The target is to be at 30% in 5 years' time. We will strive to achieve this, and we will do our best, even though we understand that there are constraints with women in mining. Okay? On the last section that I'm going to speak about, it's inclusive procurement. So the mining industry, on average, spends about 280 billion rand every year on goods and services. So therefore, procurement becomes a very critical element in transforming South Africa. As I've already said, there are now specific targets for not only women-owned companies, but there are also targets for youth-owned companies. And this will assist in spreading or sharing that 280 billion across different types of companies, so including more companies which were previously not in mining companies' supply chains or value chains. So when we talk about the what the inclusive procurement element in Mining Charter 2018, we understand that there is a very strong focus on local manufacturing, localization, local content, as well as job creation. And we are in support of this. However, there are a few challenges that we are having on the inclusive procurement element, and these are it's mainly about the targets, how the targets were arrived at, and the lack of a study that says where are we today as a mining industry, and how will we be able to, in the next 5 years, arrive at the targets set by our regulator. Again, so if you look at what localization has been, or what localization in other industries within South Africa, so we will take the automotive sector. The DTI has been incentivizing the automotive sector since the early 2000s, and they spend billions of rands on incentivizing local content, and the figures today are currently only sitting at close to 40%. The mining industry is expected to be at 60% local content, and for them to start accounting for this within the next 2 years. So it is a bit of a stretch, and we are still in negotiations or in consultation with the DMR on some of these figures, and we're hoping to find a resolution that will work for the benefit of South Africa, because we understand what localization can do for the economy, but at the same time, we need to be able to set targets that are realistic and targets that we are going to be able to reach within, you know, a realistic time frame as well. And just maybe as a conclusion, you know, I think as the mining industry and as the team that's worked on the mining charter, we promote transformation and we support transformation and the mining charter as a tool. We also support localization, and this is also the reason why we are in continuous engagements with the minister, with the team at the DMORE now, to understand and almost understand where we are as an industry and what it is that we need to do in order to be able to implement Mining Charter 2018. And where there are certain issues, we are constantly engaging with them because we believe that this transformation is a journey, and it's a journey that we are still on as a country, and the goals and the targets that we need to be setting need to be realistic so that we can all participate in ensuring that transformation takes place within our lifetime. So, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Chair, honorable members, thank you for the opportunity. From the environment side, I think we recognize that unregulated mining could have detrimental impact on the environment. Hence, as Roger had said, one of our strategic goals is to ensure that we provide thought leadership in ensuring that our member companies operate in an environmental sustainable manner. We achieve that through enforcing maximum compliance with the prevailing national and international environmental laws and standards, and secondly, through facilitation amongst our members' adoption and mainstreaming of environmental best practices going beyond the legal and policy requirements or obligations. And thirdly, we achieve this through lobbying and advocacy on adequate environmental legislation or policy. In terms of the our facilitation in the adoption and mainstreaming of environmental best practices, we've had partnerships and collaboration with various government departments to achieve this. And just to mention a few of partnerships that we have, we've got a partnership on mainstreaming biodiversity in the mining operations with the Department of Environmental Affairs, Forestry and Fisheries, and one of the outcomes of that collaboration was the development of the best practice guide to guide mining companies on how best they can take into consideration biodiversity issues. And still on partnership, we've had quite a long-standing relationship with the Department of Water and Sanitation, where we've recognized that as the industry, we need to respond to the current water challenges or pressing matters in terms of water, and also taking into consideration that South Africa is a water-scarce country, and mining industry is one of the main water users. Through the collaboration with the department, we've managed to improve the water use efficiency amongst our member companies quite significantly, and that was achieved through the development of the adequate tools and measures to ensure that our member companies use water efficiently as and when they mine. And one of the outcome of this collaboration was also now to develop a self-assessment tool for companies to be able to account for each drop of water that they use. We've also collaborated with AgriSA to ensure that there is mutual coexistence of mining and agriculture, because we know that both sectors compete for the same resources, hence the need for collaboration to ensure that both sectors understand its impact on each other. As we advocate and lobby on adequate environmental policies, there are some policy and regulatory impediments that negatively affect impact on the competitiveness of the mining industry. And I must say that from Minerals Council side, we've engaged extensively with the relevant government departments to try and resolve the issues of difference or the issues that we feel that impact negatively on the competitiveness of the mining industry. And just to mention some of the few policy issues that we are engaging on, The first one is the NEMA Financial Provision Regulations. This came about from the One Environmental System. You'll recall that in the past, environmental issues in the mining industry were regulated in terms of the MPRDA and the regulation. However, to mainstream the licensing process, there was a decision that environmental issues in the mining industry should be regulated in terms of NEMA. That culminated in the development of the NEMA Financial Provision Regulations. I must state up front that as the industry, we support the intent of financial provision regulations because we believe that this would go a long way in ensuring that mines are adequately funded to deal with the environmental risks at premature closure. However, there are some practical implementation challenges that the proposed regulations present for the mining industry. And in summary, I think the challenges relate to the actual proposed methodology, the provision for ceding of financial provision funds to the minister, and also the onerous auditing requirements that the regulations bring for the mining industry. We believe that this proposed regulations increases the quantum for environmental liability way beyond the determined risk profile. And the intervention that we seek from the portfolio committee is that this portfolio committee facilitate together with the Department of Environmental Affairs or the Portfolio Committee of Environmental Affairs and Forestry the review of these regulations to ensure that we have adequate regulation that is consummate with the environmental risk at premature closure. The second regulatory impediment that I would like to bring forward is the issues brought about by the Preservation and Development of Agricultural Land Bill. This bill is currently at NETLEC, and we foresee that immediately after NETLEC processes, the bill is going to be introduced to Parliament. The challenges that we have with the bill is its intent of preserving high-value agricultural land through inhibiting various economic activities, including mining. Thus creating no-go areas for mining, which effectively trumps the provisions of the MPRDA. And the second challenge that we have with the bill is the introduction of an agro-ecosystem authorization, whereby even if you have your mining right or mining prospecting from the Minister of DMRE, you will still be subjected to another layer of authorization regulated by the Minister of Agriculture, which can be approved or denied. Hence, if you have your mining right, you might not be able to exercise it if you do not get the necessary approval or permission by the Minister of Agriculture. The recommendation on this particular bill to the portfolio committee is we believe that both sectors have got a strong case to mutually coexist. Thus, the bill should be revised to provide for an equitable dispensation through exempting mining from an agro-ecosystem authorization and integrating or incorporating agricultural consideration within the existing environmental authorization instead of having an additional authorization. Other regulatory challenges that we would like to bring to the attention of the portfolio committee is some of the delays in terms of finalizing the necessary applicable regulations to enable the implementation of the One Environmental System, and the delays that we've had in the finalization of the NEMLA 4 bill, and which sort of presents the policy vacuum in terms of providing policy certainty on the EMPRs approved in terms of the MPRDA to be deemed as the environmental authorizations approved in terms of the NEMA. The recommendation that we're putting forward is that Parliament facilitate Tamiya's finalization of the NEMLA 4 bill, and obviously with that also the commencement of the transitional provisions that are in the MPRDA and also in NEMLA 4 bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, honorable members. I'm going to give a brief overview about the relationship between mining and communities. In the first instance, I think communities that live around mining deserve a better, you know, benefit from the mine in which it's operating. Now, the tools to manage this relationship between communities and mining is basically the social and labor plans. But there are structural challenges relating to these social and labor plans. The first challenge is basically the misalignment between the IDP of the IDP of the municipality and the social and labor plans of the companies, not just in terms of content, but also in terms of planning and cycles. So this, the cycles are out of sync, the content do not align, the demands of communities are different to the demands of the municipality officials, and therefore the mine is caught, you know, in a whirlwind of political dynamics. The second one is persistently high unemployment in these communities, and therefore there's a high competition for the scarce jobs that are there in that community. Thirdly, in most instances where these mines are, there are no other economic opportunities, and the mine is the only site of beneficial economic activity, and therefore it creates further tension. Thirdly, the development of modernization technologies by the companies means they're probably going to employ fewer people, and this also just adds to the to the dynamics of the problem. And lastly, the municipal capacity is also a problem, because municipality basically in certain instances is not able to live up to its mandate in terms of providing services, and when the municipality is not providing services, the communities blame the mines. Now, what have we done about it, about these dynamics that these dynamics that I've just mentioned? Now, in the first instance, the communities have been protesting against the mines, either by basically stopping production, blocking the roads, and invading the mines physically. Now, the mines then engage the communities one-on-one. You know, whoever protesting structure is protesting, and then some few demands are made. Those demands are either met or negotiations take forever, but it's never a sustainable solution, because it's just an ad hoc approach and a last-to-last approach. So what we thought would work under such circumstances is basically to create a multi-stakeholder engagement platform, which is under the authority of the municipality, where the municipality has the convening power, basically to convene all relevant stakeholders, not only the mining companies, but all the other private sector economic activities in the area to design and agree on the way forward for the economic development of that municipality. And in this mega planning forum, then the agreements in terms of what's going to be in the SLPs, how the mines are going to collaborate, what the municipality's role is going to be, becomes a much more winnable opportunity to advance the interests of the communities. Now, there has been a renewed focus in terms of also identifying what skills are required, you know, and what mines can do about it. So we have created two things. The first one is we need collaboration with the municipality. But secondly, we need collaboration amongst the mining companies themselves, because one mining company on its own, thinking independently of others, cannot really achieve the kind of scales of economies that is required if they were to collaborate. So we are busy creating those platforms, and we think with those platforms we'll reach win-win situations. Thank you, Roger.
Next, thanks very much. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, let's just go to the employment relations side. The focus here, clearly employment relations is a very wide set of issues, obviously. But what we want to focus on here is that we have seen an ongoing reduction in the amount of foreign labor employed in South Africa's mining sector. All new employment opportunities that are being created over time are obviously being for South African citizens, mostly from host communities. We have been part of a number of different collaborative efforts with the Department of Home Affairs to resolve issues around temporary residence visas through an alternative visa regime. And obviously, we've been ensuring that, you know, that there is a conversion to the new corporate visa regime as per the amended Immigration Act and regulations. And so there's an ongoing set of issues here and ongoing engagements that are taking place with Department of Labor, Department of Employment and Labor now to ensure updated bilateral agreements, et cetera, with some of our host countries. Because, again, the host country issue, there still are a number of people employed from neighboring countries in South Africa's mining sector. The number obviously is coming down, but it's quite a big area of source of revenue and payments back to those countries, and so there's been quite a bit of engagement taking place with the different respective countries. If I may then quickly shift onto the skills development side, it is a really important component of our business. Last year, the Minerals Council members, or the industry as a whole, spent about just over 7 billion rand on skills development. We have a number of different programs with over 4,000 students subvented through the various universities or through technicons, through others and training. We even have in place subventions to the various universities to make sure that we keep lecturers there to keep the quality of the staff at a level which keeps us really globally competitive. So, for example, this university, Mining Engineering, is ranked 13th in the world for its quality of its mining engineering, as an example. There's also been a big focus through our SLP-type programs around youth development, and more than 90% of those development programs are focused on black women. So just to highlight some of our initiatives there. The MQA, the Mining Qualifications Authority, was established through the Mine Health and Safety Act. It wasn't established as a specific under the Skills Development Act. I actually sat as one of the negotiators of the Skills Development Act back in, I think it was 1997. And key challenges, just to make sure that we have institutional framework where the two pieces of legislation, there's no mismatch between what the Skills Development Act and the Mine Health and Safety directives are in relation to the Mining Qualifications Authority. And so we do a lot of work in those institutions, and you know, one of the key things that we've been doing is working with those institutions and with the other universities, in particular focused on His Excellency President Ramaphosa's focus on the fourth industrial revolution and what that'll mean in the future for what sort of skills we need from a mining sector perspective. So that remains a big area. Human resource development is a key part of the charter, and at the moment we are involved in some serious discussions with the Department of Employment and Labor regarding the, let's define it as making sure that there's alignment between the employment equity targets in the charter and the Employment Equity Act amendments. So again, on the skills side, key focus of our business, and we are spending significant resources on the area. It's not a short issue. We could spend an entire session like this just dealing with illegal mining and the impact of crime on the mining sector. What we found is that there has been an incredibly big escalation in artisanal mining activities undertaken in places like the Northern Cape. Often there's no distinction between illegal and artisanal mining, but there is a degree of uncertainty from the policing side as to how to handle artisanal mining. It has had an impact on existing established mining, which has been a big challenge for the industry. And then even in large-scale existing mines, we've had infiltration of illegal miners coming into the sector having a very big impact. And I think the quantification of that impact is not insignificant. We also have some fairly large-scale illegal mining taking place not regulated by the DMRE. So in other words, areas where large-scale illegal mining is taking place, product is being exported, and the country is not receiving the benefit of that from a tax and other perspective. We've had to obviously significantly improve our security measures in many of the mines, but we're also working with the DMRE on understanding artisanal mining and small-scale mining much better and how it can be regulated. We've got some ideas on it. We're working on it, and we're obviously working with all the different security cluster establishments to make sure that illegal mining is managed down from a risk point of view to the country, and that we deal with the issue in a way which is obviously constructive. Let me hand back to Nick. He's going to deal with the legacies of mining, and then we'll get back into our sort of last quick stretch on the presentation. Thanks.
Thank you. I think the committee has been almost updated in terms of what our health and safety practices are, and that when you fall through the cracks in terms of that health and safety practices, that there should be some kind of a compensation framework that would compensate you for the either the occupational injury or the occupational exposure that you've received in terms of working in the mine. Now, there are two compensation systems. One is the one by the Department of Health called the Occupational Disease and Mines Works Act. It's facilitated and coordinated by the Department of Health. And the other one is the Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Disease Act by the Department of Labor. Now, the two systems both cover mine workers, but they cover different parts of the mine worker. The COEDA, that is by the Department of Labor, covers all occupational injuries and disease except the cardiopulmonary organs. That is, they cover the whole of the worker except the heart and the lungs. The heart and the lungs are then covered by the act that is controlled by the Department of Health called ODIMO, and they've got a different compensation system for that. COEDA, the administration of the act, the payment, the assessments, and all the system issues has been outsourced to RMA, the Rand Mutual Assurance, and people are getting their payments and everything is working well. But with ODIMO, there are structural problems. The first one is that there is a large backlog of claims. That is, you've got claims where workers have got a compensatable disease, but they are not able to access their benefits. The second one is the administration system, the IT system, is quite old and outdated, and therefore cannot handle the requirements of current demands. Thirdly, because of industrial action, labor disputes, there's been decline in productivity, so you can't pay more because there's problems. Now, the sum total of the explanation that I'm giving about the dysfunctionality of the Department of Health is that when workers don't get their health benefits, they do not blame the Department of Health for lack of access. They blame the industry for having either exposed them to occupational disease and now not being able for them to be able to be compensated adequately. So the Mineral Council was actually forced to intervene to make improvements at the Medical Bureau and the Department of Health. Now, what did we do at the Department of Health to ensure that the workers access their medical benefits? First, because we don't know who is who and how the system worked, we needed to digitalize the physical files. The files were all over the place. You know, one worker had three files. When he comes in, they take the wrong file, missing information, etc., etc. So we needed to correct that. We needed to clean up the data. So we created databases where each worker will have a consolidated file, and they would know when he came, what compensation is due, whether he was paid, he was not paid. If he was not paid, what were the reasons, and so forth. That's the first point. The second point is that we also created what we call outreach programs, where we built one-stop shops. That these are the facilities as appendages to medical facilities where the ex-mine worker can go to that facility to get a benefit medical examination. Just for information, in terms of this act, each mine worker is entitled to a medical benefit examination every 2 years, and he needs a facility to be able to do that. Initially, we provided, X-ray machines to facilities. We provided these one-stop shops. And these one-stop shops works as long as the industry is providing resources for them. Once the Department of Health takes them over, then the systems collapse. So we then decided that we need to have a different approach, and we need to diagnose what the problem is. Is the problem inadequate funding from the department, or is the problem that the systems are not working? And we eventually came to a conclusion that the systems are not working, but also the funding is inadequate. So the industry then by itself decided to make resources available to create a new administration system that will advance and improve efficiencies. And from that point, if that system works, we want to be part and parcel of that administration system going forward. So that's where we are at this point in time in trying and improve systemic problems at the Department of Health Medical Bureau for Occupational Diseases. Now, another that's Roger's problem. So, but the other problem that we have is that because of the migratory nature of mine workers, they also have pension benefits and retirement benefits that are due to them. And for whatever reasons, and they have a variety of reasons, and we can discuss them later on if there are questions regarding it, that the workers and the pensions cannot be connected. So there's unclaimed benefits, but the workers cannot access their unclaimed benefits for a variety of reasons. We'll explain that. But the other related issues, which are not necessarily under the control of the Minerals Council, is the silicosis settlement, that the workers who sued gold mining companies and the gold mining companies have settled with the litigants, and there is a trust that has been established to make sure that those workers get their benefits. Thanks, Roger.
Mix, thanks. No pressure. No pressure. Thanks very much. Okay, thanks very much. So I'm going to have to skip over a couple of slides, Honourable Chairperson, because but just on the modernisation side, you know, we certainly have upped our game from the Minerals Council and mining industry perspective on looking at how we can make the industry a lot more competitive from a technology, innovation, research and development perspective. And we've got a strong partnership with what is now, it used to be sciences and technology, it's obviously higher education, sciences and technology, through the Mandela Mining Precinct that's been established last year to drive an ongoing program around how we can make the industry a lot more efficient, competitive, and safer over time. So, a lot of work doing there, and again, that would be a subject in its own right for a future time. Clearly, Honourable Chairperson and members, we getting a stable, predictable environment is obviously critical for the sector. So we have had a lot of progress in the last 18 months, but having said that, we're still not, from a country perspective and an international perspective, rated at the highest levels, and we need to do a lot more work. We have a number of issues here, so we've had obviously a better charter finalised. There still are some outstanding issues. One of those outstanding issues is non-recognition of continuing consequences on renewals. We've had the withdrawal of the MPRD Amendment Bill. There are a couple of areas that will need to be looked at where obviously the committee will be involved around, you know, how you deal with dumps, Section 11s, turnaround times. You know, 300 days for a mining right or an exploration right is just too long. In Botswana, you'll get a mining an exploration permit within 2 months, you know, so we need to think about a couple of those things. There definitely has been improvement, but there's still some unresolved issues there. On the carbon tax side, I'm going to explain that in a moment, and then we've got the VAT refunds and other changes to the tax system which keep on hassling us, but on the carbon tax, I'm going to explain that in a moment. On infrastructure, we have a very detailed slide here, apologies for the detail, but just to highlight that if we just look at electricity, we supply about 90% of Eskom's coal, and we use 30% of Eskom's power. So Eskom and the mining industry are joined at the hip. And so we have an extensive engagement process that's taking place with ourselves, with the Minister of Mineral Resources and Energy, and obviously with the Minister of Public Enterprises on Eskom. We have, our companies have contracted in an additional 14 million tons of coal to help make sure that Eskom's coal stockpiles are stabilized, and we've also played a significant role in seconding people into that technical review team that went and reviewed all the power stations. But just to highlight to you, electricity prices in the last short period have gone up by over 523% in the last 10 years. South Africa doesn't have cheap electricity anymore. You can buy electricity in Canada at 65 South African cents a kilowatt, whereas it costs around 6 cents per kilowatt in this country. So we're not seeing the investment in any high-level smelting-type capacity simply because electricity prices on a reliability side, on a pricing side, have become too challenging. So it's my penultimate slide, Chairperson. Imagine taking a 5 billion rand gold expansion project to an investment committee, and I want to highlight this to committee members because I think looking at it from an investment committee perspective is quite crucial. So I'm sitting as the CEO taking the committee taking this particular project to the committee, and I'm saying it's 5 billion, it's going to extend the life of the project for 20 years, it's going to employ 7,000 people, and the committee chairman says to me, so Mr. Baxter, what is your view on the electricity price by 2029? Because in the last 10 years, it's gone up by 523%, it's now 25% of cash costs. It used to be 11. It's a big, big constraint. And me as the CEO, well, I don't actually know how government's going to restructure Eskom. I don't know what the future price trajectory is going to be, given the fact that Eskom now has 440 billion rands worth of debt. The second question is, Mr. Baxter, when you have to renew your mining rights in 5 years' time, will you have to top up at that particular stage? Because it does have an impact on the project economics from a empowerment or transformation level. Is there continuing consequences in your existing mining right? And the third one, Honourable Chairperson and members, is, Mr. Baxter, what will your carbon tax liability be in 2029? Because in 2023, we assume that the full carbon tax is going to apply because there are no offsets. At the moment, we estimate that 170 rand per tonne is what the carbon tax will be. Treasury have not provided any detail on what the tax-free portion will be. Remember, in the first phase, they have provided some detail, and we reckon we qualified for about 60% of that, but the carbon offsets regulations, the carbon budget regulations, et cetera, have not been published, so we don't know, so we can't assume. We pray for the best but plan for the worst. So just to highlight that in 2023, we've just finished the exercise. We estimate that our carbon tax liability is going to be about 5.7 billion rand, and we think that it has a massive impact, given the fact that we don't have sight of a number of the other parts of the toolbox on climate change mechanisms that should be in place. And I think one thing that's of particular interest to the committee is that if you think about, we have three different major mining companies wanting to invest in new green energy in South Africa, but the pathway to getting licenses from NERSA, from it used to be energy, it's now obviously minerals, resources and energy in terms of the IRP 2010 exemptions, etc., are quite challenging. So I think it's a significant issue that we need to engage the committee on in due course, because, you know, on the one hand, we've got the carbon tax being put in place, which is more of a stick, but we're not having a framework created which is a pathway around incentives to enable us to invest in the greener economy aspects of the area. So, penultimate slide, just very quickly, the appointment of the minister, we've seen a number of areas where significant work has been done. It's not to say the challenges have gone, but I want to say is the environment still remains challenging given some of these significant uncertainties that I showed in this particular slide related to uncertainty on pricing of electricity, uncertainty on the continuing consequences issue on the charter side, and uncertainty on the carbon tax liability. And I think it's incredibly important that Parliament also engages government on some of these issues about creating the certainty which would enable us to make the investment decisions that get this great industry back on track. So, Honourable Chairperson, we have a shared vision of the future of the industry and how we can transform it. We believe it's built on ethical leadership and good governance, available, efficient, cost-competitive and reliable infrastructure, that we have to have policy and regulatory certainty in place. We have to improve productivity and competitiveness, and we have to have a greenfields exploration boom. And the greenfields exploration boom, again, is one of those subjects that we could spend a couple of hours on in terms of what the potential options are. So thanks very much, and I look forward to your questions.
Okay. We are seriously, seriously running absolutely behind schedule. But I'll try and fix it, even if it's on the air. I'll fix it moving. No. I know how I'm going to fix it. Let's go. Come back at 1:45. The early one at 1:50 will be asking the question. The later one who comes after the questions are closed, it will be closed. And we can make the announcement.
Lunch is served for everyone. Can I just request that members first go and then our guests after members? Thank you.
No. Thank you.